good. Dan Lung's always playing some great bumper music to lead us into each one of the segments. As we are now leading, this is an extra pressure, right? There's extra weight on the shoulders of, I think, everybody involved, because we are leading our way into what is going to be a brand new and exciting year, right? Okay, so, right? All right. High atop Chicago and the Allstate Skyline Studio. It is Dane here with you one last time for Nick. In for Nick DiGiglio until 5 a.m. today. And the prodigal nephew of Larry from Aurora is with me as well on what is officially New Year's Eve, Dino Tiberi. Dino, welcome into the program.
Oh, absolutely. Great to be here. Thanks for having me in here with you tonight into the 2019 year.
We are on the precipice of what
the brink.
We are looking back into the burning dumpster-style wreckage in some ways. And then some ways, I'm sure there's some fond memories. I mean, it's an entire year, a lot of good, a lot of bad. Hopefully a lot of just, you know, nondescript, you know, bland, unmemorable moments for sure.
Right.
But with some nuggets in there that we're going to look back, kind of review and contemplate. You can as well, 312-981-7200. You can add your favorite moments of 2018. And then, of course, what you're looking forward to in 2019. If you want to add the extra pressure, we just talked about it. We're taking it on. We're going to try to play peppy music and kind of shepherd people into 2019. If you want to take the extra pressure of identifying what it is that you will have as your own personal failure coming in as a resolution for 2019, not now, right? This is, you're going to make it well into that third week of January
before it stops and it's all over.
Yeah. If you're Ray Liotta, you're like, I want to quit smoking, but I couldn't do it. You know,
right.
Like Chantix.
Took me 2 days. That was all I could do.
You think at what moment in the Chantix, because smoking is one of those things, and I don't think there's anywhere near as many people smoke now as maybe did 20, 30 years ago. So obviously there's some progress, you know, on the health side. But in that ad, and I think it is so important because it's been successful. It's on all the time, Dino, which means it must be working, right? Remember when we were doing radio last time, you were in with me quite a bit during this same holiday time, and we would hear nonstop commercials for CatSpot.
Right.
You know it must be working, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Cat owners are responding, relating to the Western cowboy-style cat litter impresario.
Yeah, I remember that.
And it was working. So you got to feel, some people are looking at that Chantix thing, and they're saying, they're saying, hey, I like Ray Liotta. He was, you know, a funny guy, who you calling funny, or they're saying, hey, look, Ray looks like he's really struggling with this, not only the making of the commercial, but obviously smoking, and maybe, you know, this can help.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, that commercial has been on. Every time I turn it on, I keep seeing him, but I'm like, all right, next. I've seen it six or seven times, and, you know, I didn't realize that, you know, I don't smoke, so it didn't really relate to me that much. But both my parents did, and, you know, it's a battle. It's tough.
It is. Oh, my gosh.
It really is.
It's hard to be able to get through on the smoking side, for sure. But I think I have not been, a cigarette smoker, and so I've never had to deal with it. I know it's tough, obviously, especially now. I was in line at a gas station, and someone was buying a carton of cigarettes, and it was closing in on $100 for a carton of cigarettes.
$100.
You really got to like smoking. It isn't what it used to be, which was just kind of this, hey, it's just some, you know, an extra sort of thing to do with your hands and your face, you know, and it's a social kind of an activity, and, you know, if there's any peer pressure involved, well, everybody's doing it, or it was much more acceptable, right? Now, I mean, there's a serious investment. If you want to smoke, you need to get
your 401k. You probably have to get a second job. Yeah, cash in your 401k.
I think we did that. It's Wintrust Business Lunch, and Steve Bertrand does a great job with that. And occasionally they'll talk about investments, certainly companies for sure. And, you know, I'm not positive. This may have been me spinning through the dials or whatever, but I may have heard somebody talk about, you know, calling in saying, hey, I'd like to take up smoking, but I really want to rearrange my finances. I'm not sure that I can afford it. And they said that, well, what we're going to do is we'll set up, you know, a plan, you know, so you can achieve all of your retirement goals, whether it's sit on the beach.
We could work in a couple of packs a week.
Support your relatives.
Into your budget.
You know, and then take up maybe an expensive, kind of a luxurious, you know, hobby like smoking.
Well, you know, there's nothing like sitting back, and as my uncle Larry used to do, and pull out a Pall Mall and a can of Mountain Dew and just kick back and relax.
That's living.
That is living. That was living 30 years ago or 40 years ago, but not so much now. It's, you know, I don't know, with all the areas you can't smoke, and, you know, it just is really discouraged that. And, you know, I don't really see, I mean, I don't have anybody really in my group of friends that does it. So it's, you know, it's just one of those
things. There was a time when it was so acceptable. I remember when they were first talking about outlawing it in bars and restaurants. And I remember thinking to myself, well, geez, that'll never work. You know, and I wasn't a smoker, so I wasn't saying, geez, it won't work for me. It was like, I can't imagine that, because those specific places, and especially on, you know, New Year's Eve, you know, everyone's going to be out doing their thing.
Yeah.
You just could not imagine those settings, whether it was bars, nightclubs, absolutely 100% for sure, or even restaurants, that you could not imagine them as a non-smoke filled environment. I just couldn't imagine. I figured, well, geez, who's going to go? All these people are not going to want to be there, you know. And it turned out to be pretty much the opposite, you know, where you saw people either that were not going into those places because of the smoke, or everyone just kind of dealt with it, right? You know, you just started, you just went outside and smoked.
Yeah, and that's what it is now. You'll get the brunt of the smoking when you walk into a place because everyone's standing outside smoking. And in fact, when we did the Bruin View with my uncle and Nick's, when he did the couple movies, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, they didn't have smoking in the Vic Theater. So the first thing my uncle had to do before he went in was to light one up, because he knew he couldn't smoke inside. In fact, I made the ride down a non-smoking ride because I didn't want him to smoke in my car.
That's right. He had to hang out the window.
That's right.
With the Pall Mall. Now, Pall Mall, that's a, you know, a traditional brand. It's been the Chesterfield, right?
Maybe sure.
With a filterless, right? Back before, you're like, well, filters, what do we need that for?
Right.
That's just keeping some of that great taste from us.
Now it's just that we've got the vaping thing going on now and the other, you know, types of smoke. So now people are, you know, you'll see that going on where big puffs of smoke are coming out of cars, you know, because they're doing the vaping thing and instead of smoking, trying to wean themselves off of it.
I don't know if it's trying to wean themselves off, or maybe that's a more acceptable alternative for a couple different reasons. And I think there's been some misconceptions out there that it is, well, this is healthy, right? You're not breathing in, you know, smoke, it's water vapor, but you still have, there's a lot of different things going in there on the chemical side.
Right.
There's a lot of, you know, there's the nicotine for sure. And they said that, you know, oftentimes it will lead to people just end up smoking, you know, anyway.
Right.
So I'm not sure. I haven't done all the research on the vaping thing, but on the, and we'll talk about this over the course of, because I think this is a really, I think it's kind of a fun thing to look back at, and it doesn't necessarily have to be 2018, but maybe your all time, you know, the greatest, you know, pitchman out there, you know, where you had with like Billy Mays, right? This is the guy who's,
yeah, the guy that's on all the infomercials.
He passed away, and not, you know, because of, you know, anything. I don't think it was, I don't know exactly, actually, now that I think about it, I think he died of some kind of strange drug situation. However, he was a great salesman, you know. And then you've got a guy like Vince Offer, who did ShamWow, and,
oh yeah,
you know, and these are your great pitchmen. And then you've got a guy like Ray Liotta, not a natural pitch man, and he kind of makes that clear. And I wonder if that commercial's like 7 minutes long. Is like, you know, I'm kind of known for being a tough guy, but I couldn't take smoking. It was too tough.
Yeah, it was too tough for him.
It was too tough.
Yeah. Yeah, he's, you saw him in Goodfellas, you thought, you know, you see him as a tough guy. And now that seems like he's up against a much more formidable opponent with the smoking thing, so hopefully he'll be able to get through it.
You can text him at 312-981-7200. Your favorite or the greatest or most impactful pitch, like commercial people of all time. And it makes me think, in this day and age, one of the greatest Chicago pitchmen of all time, Mike Ditka, right? This is a guy,
oh, of course,
that, you know, when the Bears, you know, when they reached, you know, the pinnacle of success in the football field, he was one of those first guys leading the charge in a night costume a suit of armor on a horse, you know, out there kind of helping to sell products
and selling everything, limousines, his restaurant, wine. I mean, he was going right down the list of, if it was moving product, he was involved in it for a while,
like
there.
Ditka cigars, and the restaurants have done quite well. And I know John Vincent is there on a regular basis. And so that's one of those things. It doesn't always work out. You know, a lot of times you get a celebrity, somebody comes in, they attach a name to a restaurant, and oftentimes, probably more times than not, it doesn't work out. But Ditka's has been pretty successful.
Yeah, it's been around for a long time, and you know, they've got a location out in Oak Brook that I've been to a few times, and they do a nice job out there. So, and I like going there, and especially with John singing you know, it's hard to beat that because he's a talented guy, and it's an added draw when you go to the Ditka's restaurant to see him.
No,
he's fantastic.
Yeah, he's great. So we're talking about some of the greatest pitchmen of all time. We're also talking a little bit about smoking, right, and whether it's the kind of thing in 2019. I know a lot of people are going to look to try to leave that in the rearview mirror. We got Bill on the line. Bill, welcome to the show.
Yeah, you guys are really too young. I can remember, I'm 79 years old, and I can remember back in the 50s, cigarettes were 25 cents a pack, $1.95 for a carton, and Raleigh's had a coupon on the back. You could save the coupons and get merchandise like the Plaid stamps or the S&H Green stamps.
Okay. I mean, I remember the S&H. I mean, I don't remember using them, but I remember either grandparents or parents, the S&H Green stamp, right? You would collect them. You could turn them in for, I don't know, dishes or things, right?
You get them for all kinds. But I meant Raleigh cigarettes had a coupon on the back. You would take the coupon off and save them for merchandise. You only paid 25 cents a pack for the cigarettes.
Wow.
Okay.
And
so 25
food and tax
might be
and everything.
So, Bill, when you think about it, how that's changed, because back then, smoking was something that was really inexpensive. You didn't really even think about it financially, where now, can you believe it? I know in New York, there's some places where it's $17 a pack for a cigarette. Can you imagine? It's just crazy.
I mean, I can't. I never smoke, but I just can't see paying $17. Why don't you take the $17 and put a match to it?
Well, just take the dollar bills and light them on fire.
Thing.
Well,
that's true.
You're making sense. Bill, obviously, it's not a good idea in any way, and part of it is that it's really addictive. But when it's addictive, and it's not expensive, it's almost an afterthought. People are like, well, what's the difference? I can do this, but now it's very expensive.
Yeah, because I remember back, you used to give carton of cigarettes to smokers for Christmas gifts. Now you couldn't afford to give a carton of cigarettes for a Christmas gift. What are they, about $100 and some a carton?
Yeah, right? That's your bonus. You get a pack of carton of smokes.
No, but Bill, think about this, and here's how it's changed, and I love your perspective on it too, because I think I remember times as a kid where someone was giving someone else a carton of cigarettes, like wrapped up as a Christmas, and it was a well-received, appreciated gift. But think about that.
Yeah.
But it's, because smoke, I think we can all agree, smoking's not good for you, so... It's just like,
well, yeah, it's not good for you, but that's why they wonder why people sell. Well, I'm getting a little slang here. Why they say people now sell squares? You know what I mean by squares?
Well,
so guys buy the cigarettes and then they break them apart and sell them like two cigarettes for a buck or something like, or two cigarettes for $2. The guys on the street, is illegal, but they call them squares.
Wow.
And they sell them all the time. So, there's a lot of guys. There's some guys make good money on those cigarettes, even at the price.
Well, hey, Bill. So maybe that's it. Maybe in 2019, Bill, because you're not actually partaking in it, so you're not going to eat into any of the profits. But maybe start a cigarette square selling business. We could take over. So, what do you? As we let you go, Bill, what are you looking forward to in 2019?
Just get this country squared away. I mean, there's a lot of things that aren't being looked at. Just for example, I tell my daughter this evening, does people realize, Venezuela is where some of the immigrants are coming from, but did you realize Venezuela is totally broke and Russia just moved in atomic carrying bombers?
Whoa.
They've landed atomic bombers in Venezuela, which is a short distance away. In the 60s, we protested in Kennedy blockaded Cuba because of the missile crisis.
Yeah, that's almost a similar.
So, I mean, no one's brought that into it. I mean, they're worried about people coming across the border. You better worry about Russia and these other countries moving into these poor countries and put them right on our border.
I think that's an important point. We're going to check it out, and we'll ask Roger and Vic Vaughn, too, to check the news out on that. A Cuban missile style
crisis. Been on the news. I heard it a couple times on the network news.
All right. All right. We'll check it out. Well, thank you, Bill. Thanks for listening, and Happy New Year to you, sir.
You too.
Thanks.
All right. When it comes to some of the best pitchmen, Vladimir Putin is a great pitchman for Russia, right? Nobody supports it. Nobody's out there selling the kind of thing better than him. We're asking for people, what are some of the best ones out there? Ray Liotta with Chantix, it's undeniable. Right.
Oh, yeah.
Mike
He's
Ditka.
The preeminent one right now. I keep seeing him on every channel.
312-981-7200. And before we go to commercial break, Charlie and Alsip. Charlie, welcome to the show.
Hi. I think of a man named, he's deceased now, Elmer Lynn Haldren. The world knew him as the Empire Carpet Man.
Of course.
One of the greatest all-time pitch guys.
He was right here in Chicago.
Yeah.
He lives about 90 years old, passed away a few years ago. The Carpet Man, Empire.
That's we'll put that on the list, Charlie. Thanks for calling, and Happy New Year. That's a great one.
Thank you.
Thanks, Charlie.
That is one of the absolute best. You know you're doing something right, just like Colonel Sanders.
588-2300.
You get to a point, you're there physically there as the commercial spokesperson, and then you're so great that even when you can't do it anymore, they just make a cartoon of you.
I actually have a bobblehead of that guy that was given to me from when I went to a minor league baseball game.
You know, that's when you know you've made it. When they make,
that's right, when you get a bobblehead of you.
Action figure, lunchbox, bobblehead, the trifecta of...
the Empire Carpet Man.
Of success. 312-981-7200, the best or greatest pitchman of all time in Chicago that you can remember. We'll look, of course, to your thoughts and things that people are looking forward to in 2019. Coming up, stay tuned, too, because Bears, obviously, we're going to be creating new pitchmen. Mitchell Trubisky Chevrolet commercial is not far from here. And Adam Rank from NFL Network is going to be joining us at 1:30 to talk a little bit about the Bears, resurgent in every possible way.
Well, another fine victory today, so we'll be talking about that with Adam, so it'll be good.
And the playoff picture. Quick break. We'll be back right after this. It's 7:20. 720 WGN. 720 WGN, the Allstate Skyline Studio, high atop Chicagoland on New Year's Eve. Daniel here with you, along with Dino Tiberi, Dan Long in the booth as well, as we kind of ease our way into what will be 2019 and some of the exciting things coming up. And I got to think that the people are as excited for the Mighty Bears as anything, right? This is a team that is kind of taken and captured the attention of what is one of America's great sports towns, obviously. But I mean, you know, you're young enough to remember that 2008 team, and it was different, right? There just wasn't any pizzazz.
It was kind of blue collar. I mean, you didn't get a lot. There wasn't a lot of flash on the offensive side. You know, when they went to their last Super Bowl, and you know, the defense was great, the special teams was great, but your quarterbacking was not very good, and you know, they was just kind of a grind it out. Hope your defense keeps you in the game, and you can win it, you know, with minimal offense and not make mistakes. But of course, you know, then it was Rex Grossman at quarterback, and he was
Dan, for the listeners and for us, obviously too. 2006 was that team. The Chicago Bears team that made it to the Super Bowl and lost to the Colts, to a Peyton Manning-led Colts team. At Rex Grossman, he was, and this is nothing against him, because I think by all accounts, unlike, let's say, Jay Cutler, who, you know, is seen as sort of a negative force of football, is that Rex Grossman was kind of devoid of personality. He didn't really have, generally thought of as a nice guy, right? But he just didn't have, and Mitch Trubisky doesn't, it's not that he doesn't have a personality, he's just kind of got sort of a, you know, he's obviously a young player. He doesn't have a ton to say. He defers a lot to his teammates. I think that's great. But he seems to have sort of this whole kind of rah-rah, go get him. I don't know. He just seems like
very energetic. Yeah. He's, you know, you don't hear, he goes out and he's kind of a little all over the place in his play. He runs out of the pocket. He does a good job getting away from pressure. But he is. He's kind of a rah-rah guy. Rex Grossman was kind of just, you know, the look on his face when he would make a mistake, that's kind of what I remember with him, because he threw interceptions and turned the ball over, and it was like, oh, man, again?
You know, blank stare.
Yeah, it was just, you got nothing out of him. And I'm not saying that you have to have a guy that's, you know, because a lot of the guys, you know, Peyton Manning was a guy that was, he was just all business. He went out there, did his job.
Peyton Manning. See, Dino, you just hit on it. This is a guy that went out there, he hosted Saturday Night Live a couple times. So sure. On the personality-wise, even though his personality was sort of,
off the field, was that's how he was. Yeah, he was fun.
Fun, but also sort of dopeish, you know, because him and the commercials for the insurance, where he's kind of the dopey guy. You know, but he's ridden that all the way to the bank. So you think pitchman, I'm trying to identify, we'll ask Adam Rank from the NFL Network after the news, too, is who is going to be for this Bears team?
Who's giving the endorsements?
Should they realize, you know, at least some of the potential and over the, and it's a young team, right? So this could be a nice run of like 3-4 years. Who's going to be that next? You know, because you've got the 85 Bears are still,
yeah, they're still in the conversation. They're selling things. They're still out there. I mean, you still see them making appearances, and that's great. And now hopefully we can get a new group of guys that will be able to do the same thing.
When it comes to and people are adding theirs in, and you can as well, 312-981-7200. Who was your favorite? A lot of Chicagoan, you know, like pitchmen or, you know, ambassadors for products, however you want to say it. We've got some of them. Greatest pitchman, this is from the 219, Kevin Trudeau. Yeah. He's pitched his way all the way into the penitentiary.
Behind the bars, so, yeah.
Right, but here, there you go. Earl Scheib, 99-95, any car, any color. This is a guy. And from the 847, that's an excellent one. And then here's one from the 847. Does anyone remember Jim Moran, the courtesy man? And big Chicago car dealership selling Ford to Chevrolet on TV and WGN constantly. And that's from Barb in the 847. Jim Moran, the courtesy man.
Yeah, that was our old friend Joe Gentile's pal.
Yeah, he worked there. That was one of his... Mm-hmm. But this is, and I don't know if this market is unique in the way that, because you've got your Al Pamani, remember the old Fensel Tufo guys?
Oh, yeah.
Remember, you know, Solosi.
Oh, Burt Wyman Ford.
Burt Wyman.
Yeah, Lynn Burton.
And those commercials were legendary.
Yeah. Yeah, my dad and I would watch TV, and that commercial would come on every time we were watching it on Channel 9, especially. That's where it was the most, and so you'd hear him talking about the cars they had in the showroom, and you could still see the commercials on YouTube. It's pretty funny.
It is great. So we're talking about some of the greatest pitchmen of all time, contemplating which one of this Bears team are going to be the next guy sell us a Chevrolet, or maybe they're going to have a suit of armor or a limousine company. Who knows? Mike Ditka has shown a lot of ways that people can do that, so we'll see how it all works out. We'll talk to Adam Rank from NFL Network.
Third down and six. Trubisky backpedaling. The pass is caught for the touchdown by Taylor Gabriel. What a catch by number 18.
After reviewing the play, the receiver did catch the ball. However, he was down by contact at the 1 yard line. It'll be Chicago's ball there. First and goal.
First down and goal.
7-20. WGN live here in the Allstate Skyline studio, high atop Chicagoland on technically what is New Year's Eve, at least here in Chicago. Danielle with you till 5 a.m. Dan Long in the booth. Dino Tiberi to my left. And on the line with us, a guy who, Chicago roots, obviously, and good Midwestern football sensibilities, but escaped to greener pastures and higher temperatures through the NFL Network. He is a podcast juggernaut and, of course, one of our favorite guys over there. It's the one and only Adam Rank. Adam, welcome to WGN.
Oh, thank you so much. Although I will say, and I know nobody will have any sympathy for me, but the temperatures aren't much higher right now. I was listening to the weather report. I'm like, dude, that's close to what we got going on out here. So, but it's still pretty good. You know, it just feels right because, you know what, if all things go correctly, in a couple of weeks, the Chicago Bears will be playing out here, and it would be apropos if that weather dipped a little bit into the 40s or whatever, although apparently the Rams don't like that kind of temperature, but we'll see what happens.
We will see what happens. We're seeing something, and it's always great to have great seats. And this is, you know, as you know, Adam, one of America's great sports towns with America's great sports fans. And to see a team kind of gel, create, progress, and move towards what is, you know, I'm not going to say they're legendary yet here, but this is a team that's got a lot of people excited. But it's all happened so fast.
Yeah, it's really come together pretty quickly, although the defense had been coming along for quite some time, and obviously John Gruden wanted to gift the team with Khalil Mack, which, I mean, who's going to turn that down? That's like, you know what? You walk up, somebody walks up, you know, you're walking down the street, you know, you're walking down Wacker or something, somebody hands you a gift card to Portillo's, of course you're going to take it. Like, what are you going to do? You're not going to turn that down.
Absolutely
so that's
not.
Exactly what happened, and it's funny because I feel like the pieces were starting to move into place. And I think that even though that they had to move up to get Trubisky and everything like that, they were still drafting really well. And I think one of the things that Ryan Pace has done is excelled on the second and third days of the draft. When you think of the guys who he's gotten in the fourth round, you know, for all the high picks that are going to be celebrated, you think about Tariq Cohen, you think about Eddie Jackson, and you think of those players. I mean, even Wims today. I mean, everybody. I think that most ardent Bears fans have been waiting. You know, they always want him to be available. And unfortunately, he had to play because of the circumstance. But, gosh, he walked in and played amazing. So I think that you know, the Khalil Mack trade is obviously going to get the biggest headlines, but I think Pace has done such a great job of putting the squad together. And it's a fun squad, too. You know, that's why I'm sorry if I'm going on too long.
No,
but
no.
I just love the enthusiasm and the way these teams play. Like, if you want, like, I know the Packers were good for a while or whatever, but did those teams ever seem fun? Like, no. Like, Favre, Rodgers, like, unlikable people. You're like, I can't even enjoy them just from a football sense. So, I mean, I obviously am a little bit biased, but you're like, I can't enjoy it. Like, they just don't seem cool, you know? But the like, everything about this Bears team, it's like, and again, we're obviously biased, but like, they're an enjoyable group of young men. I'm like, this is really awesome. And I think when you're talking about legendary, I think the character of them and the personality of them are obviously matching the talent. And I think this is going to be a team we're going to be talking about for quite some time.
Yeah, Adam, they're rallying around each other. You can tell, and especially on the defensive side of the ball, they're doing a great job of throttling these offenses. I mean, they basically shut the Rams down. They've done it twice to Minnesota, and so that kind of sets the tone for them in the game. And then, you know, the offense has come around. You know, and you think of the weapons that they have out there now compared to what they had even a year ago. It's night and day, and so it's been enjoyable to watch them go out there with these picks that Pace has made, and how these pieces fit in the puzzle, and just to watch them have fun and have football be relevant again in Chicago is a great thing, because we've had the longest dry spell for, you know, it's been, you know, 7 or 8 years, it seems like, that it's been relevant here. So it's been fun to watch, and I'm looking forward to seeing what they do starting with Philadelphia this Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and it's funny you touch on something right there about the defense playing so well. And we know everything about the defense. I mean, you know, the Chicago Bears defense for generations has been legendary. And when you think about what has been kind of the trouble spot for the Bears over, you know, the last 20 or so odd years, you go back to the Mike Brown Bears year, which is always so weird for me. I always say the Mike Brown Bears. It's like, yeah, they have Brian Urlacher and Lance Briggs and all those guys, but I don't know why my mind always goes to Mike Brown. Like, I don't know why he's the most identifiable guy.
Probably because of those two interceptions that he had for touchdowns.
Those were some fun games.
Yeah.
I was at one of those. Yeah, go ahead.
But no, you're absolutely right. I think it's kind of like similar to what Eddie Jackson's been able to do. And you look at it, and you could tell during that era that Devin Hester was the offense. Like, you know what, if you don't return this punt or kick for a touchdown, we're not scoring, and that kind of stuff. But I think, like, in this day or this instance with this team, is like the offense holds up its end of the bargain. Like, they do a great job, and I think that today you saw that. Like, it won't look as impressive. I know the Rams went out and scored 85 points against that terrible 49ers team. But the Bears were playing a really good team. They were playing a team that needed to win, that had a Super Bowl caliber defense, or at least that's what everybody's been telling us for the last couple of years, and still went out there in a game where it would have been easy for them to mail in. And they went out there and they scored 24 points. Jordan Howard, for all you fantasy dorks like me, and to be perfectly truthful, I don't care about your fantasy team when it comes to Jordan Howard. I'm glad he got those touchdowns, and I hope everybody who's been upset at him all year just have to sit there and wear it. But I just love that the offense is carrying its end of the bargain. When they need to make plays and they need to make drives, they make it happen. And so I'm encouraged just all the way around. And that first game against the Eagles, man, I don't know how you guys feel. I feel like that's the toughest one. Like, that's the one that if they get past the Eagles and you're like, yeah, then it's the Rams, you're like, yeah, whatever. Like, I'm not even worried about that game. I think the Eagles is the one that is the most worrisome.
Well, they've had games throughout the course of the season that have been sort of those statement games, like, oh, this is them on a different stage. Are they ready mentally to kind of take on whatever this challenge? And you know, it's refreshing in a way, but the team, and maybe it's young, they don't necessarily know. They don't know what they don't know, is they seem oblivious to problems like that. You touched on it too. With the Devin Hester teams, they were winning games, And, but it was like, it had to be, it was a Cinderella season type stuff. Like crazy stuff had to happen for them to win. And this one, whether it's, let's say it's the defense that goes in and shuts people down. Let's say it's the defense that scores, or let's say it's the offense that puts 45 points on another team. They're just so strong in like every facet of it. And they're not segregated into different factions. They seem genuinely to like each other and excited about things. The personalities are there. We were joking about, you know, some, like, which one of these Bears is going to go on to be that great next pitch man? Because we've got here 85 Bears are still, you know, selling cars and opening restaurants and things like that. But this is a team, unlike that kind of underwhelming and personalityless 06 team, this is a team that just has got a lot of really fun guys on it.
No, absolutely. And I love everything that we're seeing out of them from the club dub. Like Tariq Cohen really stands out to me, who's capturing the hearts and imaginations of everybody who's not necessarily a Bears fan. But I want to go back a little bit to what you were talking about how some of those 06 teams or that kind of era, like you would have to miracle some games. And it's ironic because the game that I think about this season, and you think about that, the 06, the Grossman Bears, is that they had that fluky win over the Cardinals where Dennis Green had the big meltdown and everything like that. And this year in Arizona, they had a win like that that was very fluky, that was very much like, oh, geez, what's going on? Like, is this team really that good? Like, oh, that was one that could have easily been a loss. And so I was a little bit, I remember just thinking to myself, like, God, it's great that they won that game, but got it. It's just ringing so true to that 06 team where this offense isn't going to be able to do anything. And if the defense doesn't get a couple of, you know, interception returns for touchdowns or something crazy, it's just not going to happen for us. But then you looked at it and you saw the next couple of weeks where they beat Seattle. They had that breakout game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and you're like, okay, cool. Now it seems like the offense is going to go out there and do it. So that, to me, is what's the most encouraging about everything that's going on right now, is that the offense is part of what's making this team play so well.
We've got to let the listeners know we're talking with Adam Rank from NFL Network, breaking down the action, long time, you know, his hand on the pulse of so many things that are happening with the Mighty Bears. And, you know, you look at some of this, this is what is also fun about this team. It hasn't been that there hasn't been fluky things that have happened. We looked at that Giants game. So many crazy things happened, or the Miami game where they had to go back and win it and lose it and win it and lose it and then lose it and lose it. Like so many times, there's been crazy things. It has been a blast to watch. I tell you, that Giants game, people came in feeling as though, not that they won the game, obviously they didn't, but it was just it was like a nonstop action thrill ride.
Oh, yeah, it's one of those things that you look back. I mean, it's kind of disappointing in that had they won that game, they would have had home field, or they would have gotten the number two seed, wouldn't have to play this coming weekend. Things could have been a little bit different, but you're absolutely right, where we should have taken that, looked at that as kind of a win. I think everything has been a step on the journey, and that you have to learn from some of these experiences. And for Coach Nagy, you know, it's a process. You know, as great as he's been, you know, you need to learn these lessons moving forward. I was even thinking back to week one and losing that huge lead at Green Bay, which you never want to do, and you're never happy that that's going to be, you know, that that happens to you. But you look at the course of how this season played out, and you wonder, you know, if they would have had success in that game, would they have gotten too full of themselves? Would they have gone in a different direction? What would have been the ultimate outcome of this team? You know, that to me was kind of a character building situation. Obviously, I would have wanted them to, I never want to see Aaron Rodgers walk off that field victorious, or all the theatrics that he went through or anything like that. But, you know, everything that just happened, just kind of like, okay, that's something you can learn from. The Miami game, hey, there's something that you can learn from. The New England game, knowing just how close you are to competing with somebody who's been on the Super Bowl level for quite some time, but not quite there. The situation with the Giants, you know, all those things just kind of help add to the character of this team. And I look at it, it's like, I wouldn't trade the Rams win for anything. I wouldn't trade the second game against the Packers for anything. Like that, it just is part of the journey. And I think that, you know, that Giants game being number one of something, like, it's so frustrating that, like, oh, it could have been so close. You know, so many things could have happened. Nagy could have gone for two instead of trying to go to overtime to see what could have happened. especially when you look at his play designs on his two-point conversions. Like, they're amazing. So, but ultimately, it's just part of it. And I think that where we're sitting right now, we got to be proud of what this team has done. And I'm just happy where we're at.
Yeah, it's the thing about what's been going on this year offensively is, you look like today, two-point conversion, they throw it to a linebacker. You know, it's just you just don't know what's going to happen with the way the offense is going right now, and it's been pretty cool to see. I mean, we talked about it, how the offense and the defense, really there's not like a separation of the two. They're all kind of together. It's been kind of cool to see some of the defensive players get out there and get involved in the offense, and you see the guys when the defensive guys are like a lineman scores a touchdown, you know, when they come off the field, everybody's surrounding them and they're like, yeah, you know, it was awesome. And it's not like, you know, where the defense isn't enthusiastic about what the offense is doing. And I just think that, you know, the way that things are going right now offensively, who knows what's going to happen next, and it's great to watch and see. What's he going to do now? What's going to be the new twist with the playoffs coming?
Well, I would love to. And hold on, Adam, because we've got to take like about a 1 minute break, and then we'll come back and we can get to what Dino said, which is, I think, is what we're maybe most excited about. And maybe the guy that's learning the most isn't necessarily the team learning how to win, but it's Matt Nagy, you know, kind of easing into, you know, the oddest. Like, he's like a sort of a reluctant genius kind of thing. It's weird to put your finger on it. We'll talk about it in 1 minute. We'll have Adam Rank from NFL Network on with us. Quick break, 720 WGN.
No matter who you play, you know, whether it's offense, defense, special teams, everybody's going to have their own suggestions. For me, I love winning. I think it's fun to win. And so when you win, you know, whoever it is, who cares? Let's just play ball.
720 WGN. Hi, at Top Chicago in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Dane here with you until 5 a.m. Dino Tiberi to my right. Dan Long in the booth playing some great audio and on the line with us straight from the NFL Network, the one and only Adam Rank. And Adam, this is, you want to say the Khalil Mack, you won the lottery with him. He's a great player that's undeniable, makes everybody better, right? You got to focus on him, and it leaves, I think, opportunities for the rest of all that talent. But it's the coaching side. John Fox, when he first got here, on paper, it was a guy that took two teams to the Super Bowl. It looked like, hey, this is a nice fit. It wasn't. And you got Matt Nagy in here, and I don't know what it is he's doing. He's got some crazy plays, but he's not all crazy plays. He's not all gimmick. He's so solid, but he does it in such kind of just like a regular guy. You know, he's not like the evil genius. He's not like the crazy, like Joe Madden with the Cubs kind of coach. He's just so regular. It's just amazing how he's pulling all together and get these guys to kind of get behind him.
Yeah, but they're still like old school people. I still have friends. I still have family who live out there who still get a little bit too disconcerted when he throws the ball too much, when it's third and two and they're throwing, what is this coach doing? I don't get this, you know, and it's like, I got to calm them all down. I'm like, listen, this is the way people play football now. This is what we got to do. But I think that, it's really fun to see, you know, it's fun to see a vibrant offense. And obviously talking about John Fox and what he did last year to not help the development of Mitch Trubisky and everything, that it's been a breath of fresh air to see somebody coming in and running like actual pro concepts from the 2000s. And you're like, oh, wow. And we have guys that are able to do it as well. And it's fun, too, just seeing the different people who step up each and every week. And we talked about Wims in the previous block, and it's been him. Or some weeks it's Taylor Gabriel. Or other times it's Allen Robinson. Obviously, Tariq Cohen has had some flashes here and there. Trey Burton's had some good games, and then it has disappeared, at least from a fantasy perspective. You know, so it's just not one guy that you have to rely on. And I thought, again, talking about the great moves that Ryan Pace has made in the draft, is free agency-wise, like, that was really good. It was a puzzling decision why the Jags let Allen Robinson go. Now, obviously, he's been fighting through some injuries, but he's been a clutch performer for this team. And Taylor Gabriel, which, you know, a couple of years ago, that would have been the big signing. And it would have been like, he's our number one guy. You're like, wait, what's happening? But, you know, he's part of an ensemble, and it all works. Anthony Miller was a great draft pick. So it's really nice to see. And again, yeah, that Nagy's just kind of got that blend of other personalities, like you said, where he's not too overboard like Joe Madden, but is still crazy enough to, you're like, what is he going to do? Like, we're not quite sure right. what he's doing. And he's got some innovation in him as well. And he's a young guy, and he's vibrant. It's so opposite of Fox. And I don't want to bury John Fox because I don't think that's fair. But it was just such a peculiar hire because, obviously, you guys know as well as anybody, the Bears had never hired a retread coach. They'd always done a nice job of going out and picking out a guy who's getting his first chance, you know, as a head coach. And sometimes it works out great. Obviously, Lovie Smith worked out pretty well. Mike Ditka obviously worked out really well. Mark Trestman, not so much. So it was one of those things that Fox was so weird. I mean, when you look at it, it could have been Adam Gase, and then it would have been like, well, he would have been out after 3 years anyway, so what difference does it make? But you know what? Again, like everything else, like, the perfect storm has just come together in 2018, and we got the coach. We had the guy that I want. I had a guy, because at the NFL Network, there's tons of producers and people behind the scenes, in addition to people on camera, because obviously Matt Money Smith is another Chicagoan, and Kyle Brandt and Kay Adams on Good Morning Football, obviously Chicago people. But there's a lot of behind-the-scenes people, too. And I remember one guy I got into an argument with last year because he wanted DeFilippe as the head coach. And I'm like, you know what? I think we got to go Nagy. And listen, you can go back and look through my archives. I was trumpeting him, and I thought that he was the better fit because, you know, I was looking at what Doug Peterson had done and that Andy Reid coaching tree. So it's great. It's great to have the coach that the smart guy now, that the smartest guy in the room, and everybody's, you know, they're looking, everybody's trying to find the next Matt Nagy. So it's like, it's a pretty enviable position to be in.
Yeah, it's been a good fit, and one thing I do have a concern with, Adam, is the kicking.
Yeah, the fine tuning.
It's just been driving me absolutely crazy. With, you know, four kicks hit the goalpost in one game, then he misses an extra point today. It's like, well, I just hope it doesn't come down to
Adam. At some point, you're going to need those points.
Yeah, we're going to need the points. We're going to need him to make a kick when it actually counts. And can we count on this guy? It's like, it just seems like, when he's missing routine kicks like this, what happens when he gets in a real pressure situation where we need him to make a field goal either to win the game or to tie a game? Can we count on this guy, or what's the story? I mean, I've never seen anything like this. You know, I mean, there's been other kickers that have had their problems, but it's just weird that this guy can do what he's done so far, especially the four kicks off the goalpost in one game. That's just crazy.
Hey, that's tough to do, though. Right? It's impressive that he was – at least he's consistent. You know, his mechanics are good, you know, whatever. And it is weird. And if he's listening or if he's going to end up kicking next week, I don't want to say anything to detract from his confidence. We all have faith in you, Cody. It's going to be fine. You're good. Just go out there and do your thing. I really, honest to God, believe – and this is my little theory, and I don't know. I'm not a psychologist or anything like that. But when they move the extra point back – and they started making that a play they wanted to make it a competitive play or whatever the garbage is.
Right.
They said. It
yeah.
really messed with them. Like, can you just not give them the layup? Like, just let them have, like, it's just a, you know, it's a layup. Let them go out there and do their thing, and they get a little bit of confidence. But now that everything, like, because once you miss an extra point, your psyche just goes haywire. You know, it's like when you're golfing, you know, and it's a water hole. Like, obviously, it's 127 yards. Normally, you wouldn't think twice about it. You're just pulling out your wedge, and you're putting it right on the green.
Right.
But when you put water around the thing, you're like, oh, my God, I can't think of this.
I got to be absolutely perfect.
And then everything snowballs. Because, obviously, you know, if the extra points were like they are in college or like they were 5 years ago, he wouldn't have missed one today, and nobody would be thinking about it. He'd make all his field goals. He'd have confidence. He'd feel great. He'd be like, hey, you know, I'm feeling pretty good about myself. Everything's great. This team's a lot of fun to be a part of. But he has no break. There's no easy kick for him. Like, nothing is easy. Like, of course, with that kind of anxiety, like, who can operate like that? So,
I like the way you looked at it, though, and I had to actually explain to my daughter that technically it's much more difficult to hit the goalpost every time
right.
than it is to just make the kick.
That should be worth 4 points. Like, you should be able to be, like, here, because, like, think you could change the game right there. You know, you're driving for a score, you're down by four. Instead of having to go for a touchdown, the guy comes out and says, all right, well, you got to kick the upright, so...
The 4 points.
I think that would Four-pointer. He's going for the four-pointer, everybody. Like, boom. Yeah, let's make it happen.
We are listening, of course, let the listeners know we're listening to Adam Rank from the NFL Network. He also does his podcast as well as the season is wrapping up in the fantasy world. And as we let you go, Adam, let us know that, and of course, hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to you before, you know, during the playoff, the inevitable playoff run, and of course that appearance in a potential Super Bowl situation in Atlanta. Who knows? I don't think I have the power to jinx it, so I'm not worried about it. But how can people follow your adventures? Of course, they can see you on TV, but social media-wise and all that.
Oh, thank you so much for that opportunity. The most important thing is the Adam Rank podcast. Super easy to find. It's on Google Play, Stitcher, iTunes. We just got added to the iHeart Radio app. It's my name. It's got a Chicago Bears-esque logo, which completely identifiable. It's sort of a Bears podcast, sort of a fantasy podcast. I also like professional wrestling because I'm a kook. So there's a lot of good things going on in there. And it goes. And listen, and it goes year round, so it's a lot of fun. I hope it's fun or whatever. And also you can reach me on Twitter or Facebook or anything like that. It's at Adam Rank. Some kid squatting on the Instagram of Adam Rank. So that one's got to be Adam Rank NFL. But, you know, you can find me around. I'm sitting there commenting on everything. I'm a loudmouth, so I like to comment on everything and tell people they're wrong on things. And, you know, it's a lot of fun. That's what I do.
Well, why not? We're blessed that you do it. Excited to have you on the program and one of the very best in the business. And it's great to have a little home cooking on the as far as the commentary as well. So, Adam, thanks for what you're doing. Thanks for jumping on the show today. And then Happy New Year.
No, thank you so much. I appreciate it. I appreciate the opportunity. It's always good to talk to you. And Happy New Year. And let's go get a win next week and see what happens.
WGN high atop Chicago Allstate Skyline Studio. As we can see the last bits of what will be 2018, 2019, right around the corner. It is New Year's Eve. Dane here with you until 5 a.m. in for Nick DiGilio. And the prodigal nephew, Dino Tiberi, is with us as well. And it's nice to think about which one of the Bears players, this very fun team that people like, is going to come out and be that next pitch man, that next, you know, guy that it's truly a gift. You know, you're able to come out here and explain, even if it's a variety of backgrounds, you know, this product is great, or I mean, it really makes a difference. It feels as though, just like the word of mouth, let's say, Dino, you said to me, Dane, you know, this is the best, you know, soft drink or something. You got to try it. It's really great. I would really think that was great. And if you can be a person that's a stranger, but someone that you feel like, you know, like the Empire Carpet guy.
Yeah.
You know, he wouldn't steer you wrong.
No, of course not. And you get confidence in, you know, what they're telling you, and you try it out and you find out if you like it or not. And I've done that with several things that I didn't know anything about. I hear about it on TV or on the radio. Next thing you know, I'm giving it a shot, and it turns out it's all good.
Just like Frank Thomas with we make fun of these at home. And the ladies
Big
like
hurt
it.
Beer.
The ladies like it too. So that's because I tried to get him to do this little inside baseball, but the listeners, you can be in on this. So, of course, you know, Kevin McDonough is our guy here. You know, he's one of our main sales guys, and he was going to be at an event with Frank Thomas, and I wanted him to get an ID for me for the On the Road show that we do on Saturdays.
Right.
And so, you know, what an ID is for the people, it's them say, hi, it's Frank Thomas, and I listen to the show, or, you know, it's kind of that, it's sort of like an endorsement kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I'd asked him to get it. So, like, hi, this is Frank Thomas, and you're listening to On the Road with Dane, and then I wanted him to add in there, and the ladies like it too, because... because he does those NuGenics commercials.
Of course.
You wonder if, and it's all, these are all great, you know, problems to have, is that Frank Thomas, he's known as, you know, number 35, one of the greatest White Sox players, Hall of Fame baseball player, slugger, all that, is that as he goes through life, you know, and his playing career is a little bit more in the rear view mirror, and his pitchman career is in the front, is that people will identify him more as the NuGenics guy and less as a baseball player. Your thoughts?
Yeah, as time goes on, like you said, he's on... Between that and his appearances, you know, doing baseball commentary, I mean, you know, people...
That's true, he does.
It hasn't been all that long since he played, but as time progresses, he's got to do other things outside of baseball, and that's what he's been doing.
You got to be careful not to be so identified with your product, especially unless, of course, it's just something that you do or that it is your product. Here's an example for those people that say that could never happen, is Paul Newman, one of the greatest actors of... of many generations, right? He's just
He's a great actor, absolutely
great actor for the longest time. There was talked with somebody who was maybe a girl in there like 25, and she didn't. It was completely oblivious to any of his acting, any of the movies. Any she only knew him as the salad dressing guy.
Right.
That's it. She only knew him as. You know, and not that, hey, that, you know, if you're trying to sell salad dressing, I think that you've succeeded, right? You've got to be happy to hear that. But if you're looking to maintain some shred of why you put your face on the salad dressing.
Yeah, that history gap sometimes could be a little daunting for the actor. But, you know, by having those products out there, that keeps them, their name relevant. It keeps their, I mean, it's still on the shelves now. I go walking by, I'm looking for a salad dressing, and there's Paul Newman's face.
It's a quality product. It's a, and he
it's good
back.
Salad dressing. I've had it, you know, I've had it before several times. It's good.
There you go. All right, good.
I'm a fan.
He could also do, like, from Cool Hand Luke. Remember when he had to eat all the eggs?
What we have here is a failure to communicate.
The Cool Hand Luke hard-boiled egg.
Oh, yeah. No
challenge.
No thanks.
So people are adding in, and you can too, 312-981-7200. Your favorite product ambassador, pitch man, if you will, some of the ones that you remember from Chicago. We've had some of the greatest ever right here in this market. From the 847, mentioned Jim Moran. I think we mentioned that one. 312 Superman and Burt Wyman. I'm not sure if... Now, remember, Clark Kent got a lot of credit for being the alter ego, the actual identity of Superman. Is it possible, Dino, and maybe you'll know this, was Burt Wyman really Superman?
Well, when it comes to selling a Mercury Monarch, he was. There's no question about that.
I've never seen Superman and Burt Wyman in the same room.
No. Len Burton sold a lot of cars, you know, having those showroom shots. Usually late night TV. Maybe it was during Superman that might have come on. Maybe that's the tie-in.
There you go.
And then John Wayne movies, too. That was another popular one my dad and I would watch, and you'd see him pop up on that and, you know, trying to sell you a Ford Pinto. But
what was the address there? Was it 35
North on Neshland Avenue.
That's it.
I'm not even sure what's there now. Next time I drive by there, I'm going to have to look and see what's over at 3535 North, because I know it's not Burt Wyman Ford anymore.
We've had at least three people text in about Burt Wyman. So even though this has got to have been 50 years since the commercials weren't just, obviously you can see everything on YouTube now, but maybe it's maybe at least 30 years since they were making new Burt. Does it even exist anymore? Burt Wyman?
Yeah, Ford? I don't think so. No, I don't think it's still there. You know, another pitch man that we all know and love is Harry Carey, of course. He did the La Preferida commercials. He did the Budweiser.
Well, the Budweiser. La Preferida?
La Preferida. Look, my whole cabinet's full of it. Boy, oh boy.
Okay. So we always know
that's another one on YouTube. You can look that one up if you want to check it out.
Cub fan, Budman. Of course, his own restaurants. And so he was he was promoting products that he enjoyed, obviously. And I think he lived the lifestyle for that. Now, here's another one from 847. Two-ton Baker advertising Riverview Park. Now, Riverview, that's before my time, for a lot of people's time, but a lot of people remember that. It was and I hope I'm right. It was an
amusement
park in the city or right in the city or suburbs that was very close. And I remember hearing people say that the rides were sort of dangerous, like the bobs, like get killed, right? Or no?
Well, it would go by pretty quick. I don't remember. I'm trying to picture Two Ton Baker. I don't remember
where that
came in, but I'm not. That's probably before our time, actually.
A bigger guy. Okay, so then from the 708. It says Schneider Ford, the singing Ford man, Rockabye My Baby. And thanks, Mike, for the kind words in Orland Park. So
that was Schmerler Ford.
Schmerler, right.
Rockabye Your Baby. That's what that one was from.
And then from the 847, this would have been a national one, not a Chicago one, of course. Joe Namath and his pantyhose. Now, this was controversial.
The fact that he was wearing pantyhose,
right. I think that this is a famous. I don't remember the.
He did that back in the late '60s, early '70s. He did that.
Now, was he actually wearing them, or was he saying like because he was a ladies' kind of guy, right? Wasn't he? I imagine Joe Namath, number one, of course, predicting he would win the Super Bowl, and he did, and that set up his legend for life. But I remember him in like a long, full length mink coat. And, I mean, he was a man about town at the time.
Yeah. No, there was a lot of things that he got involved in. Being in New York, it's a great market for that. So, he did a lot of those commercials. And, you know, whether it was for aftershave, for Brute, or some of those other products back in that time, where he was the guy because he was popular then. And he's still popular now. I just saw him on TV the other day.
Yeah, he's still doing stuff. And then Herbert Schmerler. That was his first name. We didn't have the first name. From the 815, thank you so much. Herbert Schmerler, the singing Ford man. This is when you need not only to be a great pitch man for products, but also you need to be able to sing. Right?
Yeah. You got to have both of those qualities, no doubt.
No, so Riverview is one of the places that I would love to hear some more about. 312-981-7200 as we
sure.
look back the end of 1 year and we look forward to another one. And as soon as Dan gets, I think he's got somebody up there which will get a chance to check this one out. And I am excited to hear about this a little bit on this. Linda, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Yeah, I heard you mention Two-Ton Baker. When I was a kid, I'd hurry home from school at noon to have lunch and watch him. I don't know if it was Channel 7 or Channel 9 that had him on. And he was in a Pirates outfit, and he had a parrot named Squawky. He played the piano, and he had also, there was a puppet named Bubbles. It was a porpoise. And he'd sing a song. Has anybody here seen Bubbles? B-U-B-B-L-E-S. Has anybody here seen Bubbles? And then Squawky squawk, and up would come this porpoise. And we used to watch, they had, I don't know, you fellas have ever watched the Keystone Cops?
Oh, you've seen some of that stuff. Yeah, they all pile out of the police car and they keep banging each other with the sticks and bumping into each other.
Right. And the 3 tons of fun, it was three real heavy fellows, and this was all your silent movies. And then he had cartoons, and once in a while he would have something like a Little Rascals or that. But they also had Borden's Milk was one of their sponsors, and he had Elsie the Cow and Beauregard the Bull, and I forget the name of the calf that they would advertise.
So,
and this is what we would hurry home to watch while we ate lunch and then get back to school by 1 o'clock.
Two-Ton Baker. Okay, so he wasn't just promoting Riverview. He was just a regular TV personality host, and Riverview was one of the places that he was kind of sharing through the broadcast, right? So he was doing a lot
right.
of stuff.
And Riverview was at Western and Belmont, right in the middle of the city.
Western and Belmont. And we're going to hear some more about that as well. So, Linda, thanks so much. I appreciate you adding. Happy New Year.
Same to you. Have a healthy one.
You too. All right. We've got Robert from Wicker Park. He's mentioning, now, if you remember, like, the AWA, the finest professional wrestlers from around the world, you would see one of these guys on there. But, Robert, welcome to the show.
Yeah, how you doing today?
Good. How are you? We're good. Happy New Year. What you got, Robert?
I was telling you about Vern Gagne pitching Dynapower on Channel 26 Wrestling on Sunday mornings. I used to watch that from 10 in the morning when my dad was still alive, when we lived by Humboldt Park when I was little in the mid-60s.
They were those old wrestling shows, and I'm hoping you can still see them on YouTube, or you can see them. But occasionally they would be on in black and white, and Vern Gagne was one of. He was one of the, I think, organizers. He was one of the main people behind the wrestling world, I think, right? He had a lot to do with it.
There were a lot of personalities back then. I know Yukon Moose Cholak was another one. You know, that was another local guy that they did Dick's Auto Sales and some other things. My Uncle Larry was a huge proponent of the wrestling bit. So, he got me started watching that stuff. I never even knew it existed. Between him and my dad, we would catch it sometimes on Sunday mornings, and that's when you'd see all the commercials with all the people that were involved. So
Robert, when you saw Vern Gagne out there, obviously he's out there making things happen in the ring, were you inspired to buy Dynapower?
Absolutely not. I was a 12-year-old kid, a 10-year-old kid, you know. But it was a different, it's all relative. It's a different world now. You know, now you got the WWE, they still, Allstate Arena, or now it's the, United Center. They got, it's a whole different, now you got Ed McMahon now, and then Hulk Hogan, everything changed since then.
Yeah, well, it's nice to see, but thanks for sharing some great memories, and Happy New Year to you.
Yes, sir, and God bless you guys, and let's hope Trump gets it together, because guys are quitting like flies on him and his administration.
Well, we hope everybody has a great New Year, including the president. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Robert. All right, so We're gonna take a break, and when we come back, we're gonna have a little bit more on some of the great pitchmen of not only the Chicago area. We're hearing about some great ones, but also nationally too as well. 312-981-7200. You can text in, you can call in, you can talk with Dan, talk with us, and share them as well on New Year's Eve. It's Dan here, 720 WGN. Tom Skilling is one of the greatest pitchmen of all time. When it comes, of course, what is he selling? Right, it's the forecast.
Well, he's selling weather, is what he's selling every day.
But he's successfully selling.
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
I think people are more interested. Granted, we've got, I think, an interesting and eclectic blend of weather that happens here. It's not San Diego that just has the same weather all the time. It's one of those places that I think we have interesting weather, whether it's blizzards or rain or snow or heat waves or any of that kind of stuff. And Tom Skilling definitely does it. When you think about Riverview, and we've had some people check in, and you've checked in too, do you know that Wizzo, now Wizzo, is Wizzo Marshall Brodine?
Yes.
The TV magic card guy?
Yeah, I was just looking at something on YouTube that it was a WGN TV story that was talking about Wizzo being involved with it somehow, and I'm not sure what. Wizzo. I'm going to have to do a little more digging and get some more information on that, but I will solve that riddle before the show is over. There's no question about that.
Wizzo would always go woo dee doo dee doo dee. So he was, and from the like Bozo Circus situation.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I guess he was involved with Riverview as well. And that was, it's amazing to think of the amusement park situation. They used to exist, and Riverview was beloved. I guess it probably just came down to, you know, a valuable real estate kind of thing, right? Where it was just more valuable to tear it down or something, right? Or the people that were running it. Didn't have it as a viable business, regardless of how many people enjoyed it. And Riverview was no more. But I know that I've heard people say that the Bobs were kind of dangerous. Like if you stood up, you'd be decapitated. I don't know if that ever actually.
I don't know if that was the case. But you know those amusement parks. You think of some of the other ones. There was, you know, Kitty Land, Dispenza's Kitty Kingdom.
Where was Kitty Land?
Kitty Land was at North and I think it was North and First Avenue, somewhere right not far from Maywood Park.
Okay.
That was one we used to go to when we were kids.
Dispenza's Kitty Kingdom?
Kitty Kingdom was in Oak Brook. I think it was in the Oak Brook area, if I remember right.
Santa's Village still exists. They merged kind of the concept between Santa's Village, which for the people who've never been out there, I think is it like Dundee somewhere?
Yeah.
Okay. And it was, you know, people enjoy Christmas, but we're just coming out of the whole Christmas season here. And somebody said, Mr. Village said, like, well, let's just keep this rolling, keep this party going and have Christmas all year long. And so they had Santa's, and now they've mixed it in. I think it's a petting zoo too. So it's like it's an amusement park. No, it's.
I was not even aware it was still a viable place to go. I had no idea.
312-981-7200. If anyone has been to any of the local kind of amusement parks that we've had over the years, people are sharing them. I think that's great. And or also like Santa's Village, if it's still, I think it still exists. I'm pretty sure. But if people have been there in its recent incarnation, and then the one that was a little further out in the suburbs, Adventureland. If you remember the giant cowboy that got some work selling tires at the, I don't know, Ben's Tire Barn or something down Lake Street. He used to be part of sort of a team photo of giant character. I think there was a giant Native American. I think there was a giant cowboy, maybe a pirate guy, maybe?
Yeah, it's been so long since I talked about Adventureland. And then you think of the other thing. Remember Old Chicago, the indoor amusement park.
Old Chicago. Oh, my gosh, the memories. So now Old Chicago, if for the people that may not have been there, it was all enclosed. These other ones were traditional amusement parks where it had to be a nice day to be a nice day. And Old Chicago was sort of, wasn't it like a shopping?
It was like a mall, and then they had.
In the middle, it was all open with rides.
With rides, yep. Yeah, we went there several times when
I remember
was a kid.
When I was a kid, I think my mom had taken me there. I was going to have an opportunity to meet Potsy, Anson Williams. And for some reason, I don't know that it
Ralph Melf wasn't available?
Yeah, no, not Ralph Melf.
All right.
Of course, he would have been a fine substitute. I probably would have rather have met Ralph Melf. But it was, I don't know that it happened or didn't happen, but that was the circumstances. But I love that place. Old Chicago.
Mountain Bolingbrook. They still have a sign out there that shows where it was. I drove by and it said,
"Is the building torn down?"
No, it's not there anymore. It just had a sign like commemorating where this was the old home of Old Chicago.
Old Chicago. Well, there's, you know, you wonder. People still like to have fun. Is it the fact? And Dino, what are your thoughts? Is it because, you know, you've got either video games or ways that people can kind of occupy their time kid-wise. They didn't have that back in the day. You had to get out. You had to play. The amusement parks are just not maybe as popular now.
Well, I think, you know, right now it's Great America is kind of, you know, obviously the king, you know, in this area as far as amusement parks go.
Disney World's doing well,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, there's and there, you know, there's other places that are smaller that have like games and, you know, bumper cars and things
and,
like
and
that.
And anytime you have, you know, a carnival kind of just rise up in an old Kmart parking lot, they seem to do pretty well. And
yeah.
I know the ones that we have in the burbs. So I'm just curious about that whole phenomenon, how that has changed. From Countryside, we do have Chris on the line. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you. How you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
We're doing okay. We're kind of remembering a lot of the different places that used to exist on the amusement park side that just, you know, they have a lot of people have fond memories, though.
And I've been to most of them.
That's great.
I'm maybe a little bit older than you guys. I don't know. But Adventureland, been to. Enchanted Castle. And you guys are missing a place that used to be called Fairyland. It was in Lyons. It was a little small place. And they had like a little train that you used to sit on and crank with your hands and go through the woods. And now then it became a Zaire. And I don't even know what it is now, Marshalls or something.
Zaire.
Another place that's out of business.
Oh, my gosh. So that's great. I'm wondering, and Happy New Year to you, Kristen. Thanks for adding in. But before we let you go, what is your thought? Why were there so many of these places? And now there's basically
because they were all fun. You know, everything was cheap. You know, well, it wasn't so cheap, I guess, to my dad because I didn't pay. I was like, whatever, you know. He used to pay 8 quarters, which was kind of expensive to get on that octopus or something. But, you know.
I'm just wondering why they, is it just it's turned into more of a corporate thing or it just isn't a viable bit? Or were they all family owned because they just don't, you know, they're not around anymore.
Yeah, they just didn't make
liabilities. It. Nobody could afford the insurance.
Oh, that's got to be it.
That might be. I'm sure that's
a factor. And of course, what pays more? Somebody come in a shop and pay money, or somebody to come and pay quarters and sit in this little boat that goes around in a circle and beep 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 beep.
You're right, Chris. You're right.
That's a vivid picture you painted right there, Chris.
I imagine myself in that boardroom trying to make the case for the beep, 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 and yeah. You're right, yeah. Not
don't
good.
You remember those little boats?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Or the little motorcycles that would go up and down?
Yeah, those were the days. Well, Chris, Happy New Year. Thanks for adding in. Appreciate the memories. It's great.
Yeah, also, guys. Thanks. Good.
All right, it is 2:30 at news time, 312-981-7200, as you're kind of looking back to some of the places that we knew and enjoyed, not in 2018, but even before that. And then some of those great pitchmen, which bear is going to be the next Burt Wyman Ford? Who do you think? Do you know, thoughts?
You know
Khalil Mack, rock-a-bye my... I'm going to sack a good deal.
I think, Khalil Mack's got the opportunity. I think, you know, based on his play and... you know, for whether he wants to do that kind of stuff, it might be the guy.
When we come back from the news, we are going to have the one and only blockbuster Blake Stubbs. We're going to talk about some of the great movies from 2018. And as we go down memory lane, Kurt Russell, one of, I think, America's finest resources when it comes to the talent of acting and entertainment. And we're going to talk with him, his career, in a little thing that we're going to be doing a bunch of times over the course of 2019. First one's going to happen right here on New Year's Eve. Seven 20, WGN high atop Chicago in the Allstate Skyline Studio. It is Dane here until 5 a.m. in for Nick DiGilio. We've got the prodigal nephew, Dino Tiberi, the nephew of Larry from Aurora, is with us as well. Dan in the booth spinning the hits. And on the line with us, this is the preeminent, the best in the business. He's got his hand on the pulse of all things theater. And he is taking a look back, which is difficult because he's so much more of a forward thinker, right? He's always kind of, you know, predicting what's going to happen, looking forward to the next film, talking about what happens in the present day. But this is one of those kind of retrospectives as we look back to 2018 and talk about some of the movies that have happened, right? And I guess we'll start probably with that blockbuster, Blake Stubbs. Welcome to your station.
Hey guys, how are you? It's been a while, and by a while I mean it's been a few days. It's great to be back.
felt that longing. Now think about this: is this when we were looking at that list, and we've got some people, and a little bit later on the program, we'll do that. You know, the people that we've lost this year, and there's always some surprises.
Yeah.
Like, whoa, I didn't remember, you know, or, oh, that's right. But I think there was less, and this is maybe nothing against any of the people who've passed. Obviously, they did the best they could, but I think we've had maybe less, you know, bigger stars or less memorable personalities that maybe we've lost this year. And then on the movie side, I'm wondering, I know we've had some of the biggest movies of all time, but was 2018 a typical year on the movie side, or was it kind of a down year as far as great movies, or is it up there?
Well, as far as, you know, films released this year, I'm actually thrilled with what we've had a chance to see. And actually, here's the thing. I don't have a problem admitting this. There's still stuff I have yet to see. And I'm not going to get to see before the end of the year. But obviously, you know, when the Oscar nominations come out, I go into kind of overdrive mode. And I start seeing all kinds of things that I didn't really have access to, you know, at an earlier point in time. Because as we all know, sometimes certain films, just to meet criteria, you know, for the big awards push, they only have to show in certain screens and then they get releases later. But on the whole, as far as blockbuster films go, I think we retreated quite well. I think there's been a lot of, I wouldn't call them big studio pictures, but, you know, great stories. Directors have been able to be in complete control of their works. And also, there have been some stellar performances that I think have been found from just everybody that you could think of. From the example, one of the performances that jumps out at me this year is Melissa McCarthy in Can You Ever Forgive Me, which is, she is great. And audiences really enjoy her work. You know, she's been a success on television. She's been a success in film. She's one of everybody's favorite, you know, recurring guests on something like Saturday Night Live. But eventually, a role was going to land in her lap that was just going to put her at the forefront. And I think that Can You Ever Forgive Me, where she plays a writer who has trouble selling her work, and so she starts forging letters and then selling them for large sums of money and becomes famous in sort of a non-traditional way. it's a movie that's surprised quite a few people, I think. Not because the performances are good. The actors in it are excellent. It's just one of those offbeat type films that if you didn't get to see it in your town, you're going to start hearing about it, I think, pretty soon, because I think she's a shoo-in for, you know, a Best Actress nominee this year. Like that sort of crept up on us.
Now, Blake, is it because, and here's the thing, so how could you know, Can You Ever Forgive Me? Is it forgive me for not, you know, doing more physical comedy and kind of the things that you know me as, you say, getting famous in a non-traditional way? Well, John Wayne Gacy did that, you know, and
yeah.
I'm just kidding. But here's the thing is, does it give her, in your opinion, kind of a leg up when you get out there as an actor and do things that maybe I think are beyond the envelope that people are used to having you in, where you kind of stretch that? And comedy, we know this too. You can be great at comedy. Typically, the Oscars don't recognize comedies or, you know, action movies or things like that. And so this might be your way to do it, because we've had a lot of actors that have said, well, here's what I need to do. I need to do one of those roles where I, you know, gain 100 pounds and do something different. Or I do, if I'm known as being a, you know, sort of a funny guy, is do something really serious. Was there some design here with this? Is she taking a project that she was excited about, or is this really her kind of effort to get more critical acclaim for her acting skills?
I think it's a bit of all of that combined. I think that there is humor in this film, in her performance, but it's not so much in the realm of what she did in, say, Bridesmaids. You know, this is something that's going to more play to her strengths as a trained actor and someone who, you know, yes, being funny may come so natural to her on camera, but what she really wants to do is something along these lines where it can play to all of her strengths. And look, hey, you know, when you're really good at something, Hollywood likes to milk that for all it's worth. And once in a while, you get a chance where a screenplay is going to land in front of you, because you will get to a point where you get to sort of pick your parts. And I think Melissa McCarthy has more than earned the right to do that. She's able to find a role here that she can dive into that isn't part of any big franchise. It's not part of anything else. It's sort of a one-off story, but then she gets to completely inhabit the character and sort of change her appearance a little bit. She gets to work with, you know, actors that, you know, not saying she wouldn't work with elsewhere, but you know, this one has a little bit more of an independent spirit to it. And I think that, yeah, that's attractive to someone who's really done just about everything you can do in the industry. But yeah, this is like a transitional piece, I think, career wise for her. I think you're going to see, quite a bit of that, especially now with, streaming platforms. You know, like Netflix is producing tons of content. I think they're releasing like 90 films in 2019. I read somewhere the other day. And so a lot of actors that we're used to seeing doing one thing are going to be afforded a lot more opportunities to do different things. And I think this is a good standout example, at least from 2018. I think it's a solid example of that.
And you and I oftentimes talk about some of the, you know, superhero films in Marvel, and they have not only been entertaining, but also huge money makers at the box office. And where do they come? I mean, there's been quite a few that have come through in 2018. Is it like a big percentage where if you're those studios looking to finance that next project, you've got to think of, getting some people in some tights with some superpowers and putting some money behind it?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, you know, the world of comics, okay, and just to give a sense, like, this was the year of Black Panther, the year of Avengers Infinity War, Aquaman just released. A big year for superhero movies, Ant-Man, you know, there was another Ant-Man film that came out, and all of them were enjoyable. As far as I can recall, I don't remember giving a single negative review for the superhero movies that I got to see this year. And as far as, the studios trying to grab new people, try to find an actor today who isn't really interested in giving the superhero realm a try. And really, here's the thing. If you go back in time, 15 years, a lot of actors would not have wanted to do this stuff. What the studios were producing was few and far between with what would have been good or attractive to an actor's actor. But now, look at the Avengers lineup of actors. All of them are fine actors. They're loving the parts that they're playing. They're being given plenty to do. They're being paid quite well to do it, of course. But at the same time, it's not looked at as a lesser form of acting anymore. It's actually something that is a big draw. And I think that mainly because they get to play the same character multiple times, they get to be woven into a bigger story, and in the end, that can be very enticing. And I think that as long as these movies that the studios are making, you know, Disney and DC taking a positive turn, I think, with Wonder Woman and Aquaman, as long as they keep making good stuff, I think we're going to keep seeing big names and attractive names, you know, jump into that foray into the superhero world. I mean, coming up soon, we're going to have Brie Larson, who won Best Actress a couple of years ago, playing Captain Marvel, which I remember predicting quite a while, you know, out from when they announced it, and I can't be more excited for a superhero movie coming up soon, even more so than the next Avengers movie. I think Captain Marvel is going to be stellar.
Oh, yeah. There's like so many things to look forward to coming up in 2019, whether it's another Guardians of the Galaxy movie, whether it's another, there's a bunch of things that are coming out, and you mentioned Captain Marvel. Yeah, as well, when we teased it a little bit before we came to you at the bottom of the hour, but we're going to do a little bit of a deep dive into the career of Kurt Russell, and he is no exception. You know, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, he was Ego, so he was there as Star-Lord's dad, getting in on that role, and I think it shows you where you can go from, a quintessential tough guy, right, as Snake Plissken, to some kind of, like, an ethereal, I don't know, God being, right, in one of the hottest movies of the year as well. Plus all of those things. And we joked about it. We just watched one of my wife's favorite movies is Overboard.
Yeah.
Whenever it's on, we get stopped. There's so many wrong things about kidnapping someone and then enslaving them to take care of your kids. But hey, it's Kurt Russell, right? So we just go along with it and we're happy. We're having a fun ride. So stay there. Blockbuster Blake Stubbs. When we come back, we're going to talk more with him and we're going to do one of our deep dives and Kurt Russell as we are here on New Year's Eve, 720 WGN. Nice. 720 WGN high atop Chicago Allstate Skyline Studio. Dane Neal here with you until 5 a.m. We got Dino Tiberi to my right. Left. Well, he's to
left.
One.
He's one of those directions.
If you went all around the earth, you'd be...
You went 360, you'd run into me at some point.
And when you think 360 when it comes to the movie world, Blockbuster Blake Stubbs is in the command center And here's one of the things that we're going to do, and it kind of fits in with some of the stuff that we've talked about, is Kurt Russell is, and we'll cover, I think maybe we'll do this every couple of weeks. We'll cover, you know, someone out in the acting world, someone that everybody knows and appreciates, but sometimes you forget some of the stuff that they've done. And I know you're a big fan of Kurt Russell, and who isn't, right? He's done a lot of work, but he's had everything from comedies. He's really great at comedies. He's done some serious stuff, I think, right?
Yeah. Oh, he has.
And so, Blake, welcome back. And is it so? When you think Kurt Russell, what do you think? Is there like 3, 4, 5 films you'd kind of put in this his kind of team photo of in the pantheon of the Russell catalog?
Oh, easily. And I you kind of just touched on it as to why. For me, a big thing with Kurt Russell is, I think, to summarize the man's career, which, by the way, spans about 56 years.
Wow.
I don't know if you knew that, but he's been going since about 1962 when he started in television. And his father was an actor. I mean, I think he was born and bred for Hollywood. And the thing about him for me is that he's always jumped at me as a real bona fide one of those last remaining true movie stars. Now, he's not out there, you know, doing kind of what Tom Cruise is doing right now, where, you know, Tom's in his, I think, 50s, and he's doing these mega stunts and doing all this cool stuff in movies I really enjoy, like Mission Impossible Fallout. What Kurt's done is he's done comedy, he's done drama, he, you know, starred in television. He's done it all. And I don't think that, he's a guy that, I mean, I love reading little stories about him, about how he, you know, pretty much just is a really down-to-earth person. He loves, you know, to talk about the business. He loves to talk about, you know, just living life and doing all this stuff. And you kind of think, it's pretty easy, I would think, for him to sort of just kind of step onto a set, become a character, work with people, collaborate. And it's because of that Hollywood upbringing I think he had. And he started so young, you know, like, I mean, he's seen it all. He's done it all. And as far as films, I mean, I don't know where to begin other than, for me, the first thing I ever saw him in was Escape from New York. If you want to go back to like the oldest thing that he did, and that's a John Carpenter film. It's very 80s, very early 80s, but it's also got a little bit of the 70s still in it. And he's got a great, great charisma in that film. And he's just like this dark hero in this dark world, but, you know, in the end, he's gonna make some form of an ending that I don't know could be happy in the world that they inhabit, but he figures out a way. And the role of Snake Plissken is probably gonna be the first on my list if we wanna talk about Kurt Russell. It's just such a cool character. And he did revisit it in Escape from L.A., but that didn't really capture the magic of the first one. Yeah. I'd be really intrigued to see him play that part again now. I think they could find a story, and I don't want to say he'd be unwilling. I don't want to speak for the man, but I think fans would really click with seeing Snake Plissken once more on screen.
Well,
so I mean, that's the kind of early, like, you know, hero that he was playing, anti-hero, really. If you think about it,
it's a cult classic, and you mentioned movie star, and there's only a certain amount of those people that, you know, there's great actors like Meryl Streep is a great actress, and she goes in there and she embodies every part that she gets, but she's always the different part, you know, whereas when you're a movie star, you just show up and it's you, you know, but you still get people to go along for the ride with whatever character you're playing, but it's still you being, you know, Robert Redford is another one, right? He's just always him.
Yeah.
And then you kind of buy into whatever the role is. And you think about the comedy side of it, and I think that's what I appreciate most about Kurt Russell. But you think about some of the, you mentioned John Carpenter. The Thing was a movie that I absolutely loved. It's one of those classics on the horror side. Not a lot of jokes in there, you know, for that one.
No. And the thing about The Thing, and this is, I think, a real Kurt Russell element, dude. He plays really tough characters, right? But compare him to the likes of, say, a Stallone or a Schwarzenegger, or even like a well, really, those two would be the big ones, that, you know, because they were breaking out as action stars shortly after something like The Thing happened. He's not the most muscle-bound guy. He kind of has a really everyman appearance to him, other than his, you know, very handsome looks. But his charisma and how tough he can play it, he's very relatable, I think, for audiences when it comes to playing characters like that. And MacReady in The Thing, I mean, it's actually a performance where if I was ever going to tell somebody, if you want to know how to play a tough guy, watch Kurt Russell in The Thing. And the reason for that is just because the way he acts around all these other actors that, by and large, some of them are bigger than he is, but he doesn't care. It doesn't affect him at all. It's all a matter of attitude and look and how he interacts with people and how he interacts with the environment around him. And the thing, of course, is like everything's hostile in that whole movie. So, you know, this character having to be the know-it-all tough guy who can handle the elements and all these other things, for whatever reason, it's like he just slipped right into that with no problem whatsoever. And I think that still that role stands the test of time. I mean, I just revisited that film, and again, I'm like, God, it's so good. And that was also a reteaming with John Carpenter, you know, who you know, made Halloween and is the kind of guy that writes the scores for his own films and stuff. So he works very well with directors who know their material. And at the same time, if they want him to be a tough guy, he can be a tough guy. And if they want him to be an everyman, he can be an everyman. And just building off of that charisma I was talking about earlier, I mean, have you ever seen Big Trouble in Little China? I think you'd be harder pressed to find a more charismatic male lead, you know, than Kurt Russell to play that part. And it's a funny movie, Jack Burton. It's a funny character, but he's a tough guy. But he's also comically like afraid for about 80% of the movie. And I think that sort of, you know, makes it relatable in such a fantastical, you know, realm that he has to operate in. It's so weird. He just slips right into that, you know, every
like,
time.
You know, you bring new words into the vernacular, like comically afraid, I think is one of those. All right, Dino, what do you got?
Yeah.
Oh, you listen, what a great performance in the movie Used Cars. That was one of my
Buick Centurion.
Used Cars
was a good
one. Funny movie.
That's one of the funny, man, that's a classic. I completely forgot, but I was looking at some that maybe go away from his, because I think the humor really stands out and is memorable, but he was in Backdraft. It was, you know, he was great in that also.
Yes.
Miracle
was, right, where he was less of a movie star and more of like he was the coach, right?
Yeah,
in that one. And then you have, let's see, what were some of these other ones in here?
You can't forget him with Steven Seagal on Executive Decision. I mean, those movies in the 80s, were great.
Were mistakes, maybe.
I'm not saying that. Actually, you know, a lot of those movies were good, and you know, they weren't, you know, Academy Award winning films, but he was still good in them.
Well, and Blake, what do you think, or what are your thoughts as far as the Western? Because he's done a lot of really memorable. You've got Tombstone, Hateful Eight. Is a guy who's at home, you know, out on the range.
Yeah, there's three particular films as far as the Western stuff that I would really give him high marks for. Of course, Tombstone. It's one of the most Hollywood Westerns, but it's also one of the best Westerns that's ever been made. And when you put him opposite, you know, all of those cast members that he was opposite, and just to name a few, Sam Elliott, Powers Booth, you've got Bill Paxton. The big one, the show stealer, is Val Kilmer. Yep. Okay, but at the same time, Kurt kind of keeps everything moving forward and doesn't let it go off the rails. His performance is so consistent and good throughout the entire film that it's hard to take your eyes off him when he's on screen, even when he's with, you know, a big player like Val Kilmer in that film, which, by the way, Val Kilmer's performance in that movie is one of my favorite of the 90s, period. So I'm very, like, I love how he can step into a film and he can just be always consistently good, even if the film isn't very good, all right? Kurt Russell himself does not phone it in. He either has complete fun or he brings a sense of level-headedness to the performance. And the other two Westerns would definitely be The Hateful Eight, which is where he's, I think, both having fun and trying to bring a sense of level-headedness to it. But at the same time, there was also a movie he made the same year as The Hateful Eight called Bone Tomahawk, which was sort of an independent, darker Western film. And you can actually stream that for free. I believe it's on Amazon Prime right now. So it's one of those things where, you know, he's a guy who's always attracted to interesting parts, and he's always going to make the best of all of them. For example, you know, I mean, he worked with Quentin Tarantino on The Hateful Eight, and he's a real scene chewer in that movie. But that's not the first time they worked together. In fact, when he made Death Proof with Tarantino, I was really awakened to Kurt Russell, the actor. And, of course, this is 2007, so right. I'm still, like, formulating my ideas about how I like to talk about movies way back then. But when he stepped onto the screen as Stuntman Mike, I couldn't take my eyes off him. I thought he was scary. I thought he was interesting, charismatic. He was drawing me in. And then at the same time, all the violent acts that he, you know, commits in the movie, you're just like, this is bananas. I can't – this is Kurt Russell? You know, and I had never really seen him like that before. And so I think there's a strong, you know, because the last thing I'd seen him in was Miracle as Herb Brooks, you know, a biographical portrayal in a lot of ways. So I think there's not enough said about how good of an actor Kurt Russell is. I mean, yes, he's a movie star in my eyes, but at the same time, when he's given something to really chew scenery with, he really does it. And Grindhouse and The Hateful Eight are both two big ones for me on that end.
As we get a chance to look back on so much that happened in 2018 and look back even further to the entire catalog of Kurt Russell, the actor, it was very cool to do that. And as we let you go, Blake, we want to get the social media out so people can continue the conversation. And then one thing you're looking forward to in 2019.
Absolutely. You can find me on Twitter at Blake Stubbs. That's BlakeStubbs. And what am I looking forward to in 2019? Hopefully you're going to hear me a lot more on WGN. I love talking movies. You know what? You guys have given me plenty of time to do that as of late. So I want to keep at it.
Oh, keep the ball rolling. All right. Enjoy. Happy New Year. Thanks, Blake. And thanks for joining us.
Yeah, Happy New Year, gentlemen.
Happy New Year.
We'll talk
Thank
to you.
Thank you.
Do you have like a favorite band or any kind of music that you're loving these days to use for the bumper?
Oh, what kind of music? Oh, let's see. What do you like? Want to pick a song?
Whatever kind of speaks to the moment you feel would be a great lead-in.
Do one of the Walking Dead intro songs.
Oh, get out of town, the Walking Dead intro songs. Good.
He's Lord, like, the Walking Dead does not define me.
Here, let me get you a song here. Hold on. Let me get it. I'll pull it up here. I'll pull you up a song. See, which one do I, my top rated playlist. Okay, let's see what my play. that's an old playlist.
Some Merle Haggard or something?
Oh my God, here you go, right here. How about this one? Flooding Down in Texas, Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Oh, that's a classic.
It is a good one. Hey guys, this is Michael Rooker, and you're on the road with Dane at WGN.
WGN on the road with Dane, live here in the Actors on this or any planet, whether he's saving the galaxy or battling post-apocalyptic cannibals, he's doing it in style. So great to have the one and only Michael Rooker in studio. Welcome to WGN.
Right on, man. Good to be here.
You know, you have connections with Chicago. Come back. You've been here on a number of occasions. I went to school here, right? You've played some Chicago sports villains in the Eight Men Out. And the last, I think it was maybe the time before last, you have appreciated some of our local cuisine. And you needed ribs.
Oh, I do that every time.
I actually got you some ribs. We had to wake up Bub City, which is a great place, at 8 in the morning. I called them. I said, Michael Rooker needs ribs. And they're like, well, we're not open till noon. I said, well, when the man needs ribs.
You got ribs.
He needs ribs.
You got ribs.
Yep.
I love it.
So when you're in Chicago and you get a chance to spend a few days here, I know you see some friends, you make the rounds, you've been here to WGN a number of times. Like, where do you eat? What do you like to get out and try?
I like going for ribs, and I do like them, and I appreciate a good beef. So I go over to Mr. Beef's, and then other than that.
So those are our Chicago delicacies?
I'm good.
Okay.
I get enough to last me 2 or 3 days, and that's it.
All right.
Well, that's all I eat.
Well, you're here. The public demands that you're here sharing some of the things that you've done in the past, you know, on the acting side, some of the most iconic and memorable. And I think that's it. So whether the movie was a huge, huge hit, the roles are so memorable. And is that your choice? And some of the interesting stories on how you got some of the roles, is that it? Or is it something that you're doing to take sometimes and oftentimes, right, you take these kind of flawed characters, even bad guys, and make them not only memorable, but oftentimes lovable?
Well, we're all kind of flawed, aren't we?
Sure.
In some ways, different ways, and different to different extents. So sometimes the films, the movies, they highlight that kind of stuff. So they try to make it even more of a flaw. So, you know, and they bring it out at a very dramatic time. Or maybe, you know, right off the bat, the guy's a schmuck, or he's not right, or something's wrong with him, and he redeems himself later on. Or, you know, like Merle Dixon in The Walking Dead.
Yeah. I mean, and you've got that range, whether it is characters like that or whether it's, you know, Roddy Burns in Days of Thunder. Mm-hmm. And then Yondu, who started out, you thought of him as a bad guy, as one of those guys that was chasing, you know, some of the stars of the movie. But in the end, like, so super lovable that by the end of Guardians of the Galaxy 2, I got to tell you this, Michael, my wife cried, like, at the end when you passed away, mm-hmm. you know, that you were able to take this guy who had, you know, was kind of one of those antagonists in the movies and make him where people cry when he dies.
You know what? It was all James Gunn's fault. He wrote it. He's the one that crafted it and made it what it was. You know, he built that role up. It was beautiful. I mean, the first time around was great, and then we just added on to it. You know, it was a beautiful a second movie.
I read a little bit about some of the improvisations that happen where they allow some of the actors, and you've got a lot of people in there with some great personalities and kind of improvisational. And the one scene, and we still do it, you know, in our family and friends, is that, you know, when you're in the store and you do the boop, boop, beep, bop, like you change that. I read somewhere that it was just going to be kind of a bland, like, blah, blah, but then you improvised and made it.
We do a little bit of improvisational stuff, but most of it's James Gunn yelling at us from behind the camera. Rooker, now say this. Now do it this way, and then now do it this way. You know, that kind of stuff. He's that kind of director.
Now
it's kind of fun to hear him in the background screaming at you, and he gives you these ideas. And you just flow, you just go with it.
Well, whether it's interviews like this or all the fans, like you're going to be meeting at Wizard World Chicago too, where they come out, does it validate? Yes. So for the next movie, you've got to say, like, hey, I know you said maybe this wasn't the best idea, but, you know, the public has spoken, and it's great.
You know what? There, you do, and you know, I think it was outcry in the first one that I didn't have the full fin.
People love the full fin.
Now, in the second one, I had a full fin.
Yeah.
And the way we got into the full fin was really cool. You know, but now I have the full fin, you know.
The prototype.
Yeah, the prototype.
As it was called. Now, it is the world of fantasy, so anything can happen. We don't have to... You could either come back in the next movie, the inevitable next movie, as a flashback, as maybe a kind of an Obi-Wan Kenobi mm-hmm. kind of dream advisor.
We're taking notes from everyone.
Yep, so dream advisor.
This is good.
Like Obi-Wan stuff.
Okay.
Or you look at, you know, Groot died and then baby Groot. Maybe a little piece of... Maybe the fin breaks off and grows a new Yondu.
I've never heard that one yet. So this is good. This is good.
So people are going to be hearing a lot. And you are one of those guys that is known for so many different things that really resonate with, you know, the fans in kind of that fantasy world, you know, with Walking Dead and things. It reminds me of, do you have to do a bunch of costume? Are you like Cher, you know, on her tour? She does all these costume changes where you have to come out and you've got to be Merle and then you've got to come out and be Yondu. Or do you just be you, right?
I don't know anyone that dresses as their characters, but yeah, you just wear your own stuff, you know.
And what is some of the things that people say? I know people are going to be excited and we'll hear a little bit about the schedule coming up this weekend where people are going to get a chance to be up close and personal with you. It's one of the things that we've seen is that you love your fans and you love that feedback. You love to interact with them. You give them, you know, advice and input.
I do. And I really have gotten into the cosplayers. I love seeing the cosplayers come up and looking at their stuff and how much energy and effort they put into it and how much money it costs. Sometimes they make it themselves, but sometimes they have to buy the materials.
Right.
You know, so if you're buying a real leather, it's going to cost you. If you're buying a fake leather, it looks like a Yondu duster, but, you know, they make this stuff themselves.
Do you ever wonder... You know, and I get it, you know, for the events and people are going to showcase, but the people maybe have taken it too far. Have you said, because you have so many different diverse interests in lives and projects and things like that, you say, like, Yondu loves you, but maybe take it down a notch if it's hurting your ability to keep a job where you can't be blue.
No. No way. I want him to stay blue all the time and walk the streets. You know, you can't get a job. You might as well be Yondu.
Now, here's the other thing, too, is when you get to the point where you are, I'm sure there's a lot of different, you know, offers and opportunities coming in. Are there things that you want to do? I saw that you've done, and this fits in with Wizard World, is on the gaming side. You've participated in creating some of those games and the voicing. Is, are there things like that you really enjoy or things you'd like to do?
Well, I do enjoy gaming. I love making the games. I've worked a lot with Treyarch and the Black Ops series. So I did a nice, really very popular map pack for Black Ops 1 called Call of the Dead, where we play ourselves, me, Danny Trejo, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Robert Englund. We all play ourselves, George Romero. That's a great game. So it's a good zombie killing game. And then I did the Black Ops 2. I was a playable character, Mike Harper. So looks just like me, but with a tan.
Well, it's good to get some vitamin D in there now and then. Well, it's great to see you. It's great to have you here in Chicago. It's awesome, I'm sure, for you to get some of that feedback, not only the, you know, the support and the praise for things that you're doing. I'm sure that feels good, but also some of those suggestions. What is it that fans have asked you to do, anything that you said, hey, I never considered that, but that sounds like a pretty good idea?
They usually don't. They usually don't ask me to. They come up with ideas and stuff like that.
Like, you got
to
do this, or this would be perfect, or you've got to meet my brother. He's crazy, you know, or something like that.
There's all sorts of stuff. I don't usually like to do video or audio stuff, you know. But I get a lot of requests to like say. Hey to my mom, would you say hello to my mom? You know, but I generally say hi.
Well, it's great. People are going to have the opportunity not only to do what they've done over the years many, many times, see you on the big screen in some of their favorite movies, their favorite games, but see you in person here at Wizard World Chicago. So before we let you go, you know, your social media, I know you're pretty active. I think it's Rooker Online is the social media. And or
Michael _ Rooker is my Instagram, and I do a lot of that.
Definitely. If you see him on the marquee, duck in, check it out, and see one of your absolute favorites, one of the very best in the business, Michael Rooker. Thanks so much for what you're doing. Thanks for being in Chicago. Thanks for loving ribs and beefs, and thanks for being on WGN today.
Thanks for promoting our show this weekend. It's a very popular one, and
it's the kind of thing that the popularity grows and grows. Yeah. You're on to something for sure.
Yeah.
And you're definitely one of the big stars, the main attractions for people to enjoy out there at Wizard World. So thank you again, Michael.
Thank you.
WGN High atop Chicago Allstate Skyline Studio. Dane here with you until 5 a.m. I do have Dino Tiberi in with me, Dan Long in the booth as well. And big thanks to Blake Stubbs for jumping on and doing the deep dive into Kurt Russell. And the people absolutely love Kurt Russell. We did have from the 847, Greg thought Overboard was a fun movie. I thought so, too, because...
Yeah, I did, too. I enjoyed that movie a lot.
You look at and hear from the 815, maybe I came into the conversation late concerning Kurt Russell and his acting. How can you forget, and I can't, his portrayal of Santa Claus in the Netflix original movie, The Christmas Chronicles?
Yeah.
He was amazing.
Yeah, I didn't see it, but I am gonna watch that because I had already told me it was really good.
Overboard, though, you know, there's sometimes you watch movies and you like them, and then you go back and watch them, and there's things that have changed maybe societally or what's acceptable or not acceptable. We talked about smoking early on in this program and how you just can't smoke as much as you used to in as many places and with babies around and on airplanes. And, you know, we all grew up in a big room filled with smoke and
yellow walls.
And now, yeah, I guess, right?
Yeah.
So now you can't do that as much. And,
nope.
So when you look at Overboard, and for those people out there not familiar with the premise, Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell, so obviously, you know, in real life they know each other, and so maybe that tempers a little bit of the kidnapping and the enslavement.
Sure.
You know, and Dino, you had said off the air, well, you know, and then you just shrugged your shoulders and said, it's amnesia.
Yeah, that's what it was all about. She hit her head, didn't remember who she was. They found her in a, I don't know where they found her at, some kind of a, she fell off the boat and then
she washed ashore or something?
Yeah, they got her, brought her into the hospital, and then she didn't recognize anybody, And the husband decided not to claim her and walked off. And Kurt Russell was like, look, he saw it on TV. He's like, look, the guy's not even going to claim this person, claim her as the wife.
Oh, that was like a double cross.
Yeah.
And in the end, and I don't think it's a spoiler alert because the movie was out maybe
35 years ago.
Yeah. Over the course of time, so he had kidnapped her, this person that he'd had a problem with. You know, she didn't like him. He was a contractor, yeah. And they argued and whatever. And she was rubbing everybody the wrong way. I mean, right. She even her, like you said, her own actual husband had wanted to just kind of like have her, you know, not be around anymore. So Kurt Russell takes her home, and he's a single dad with
four kids.
Was there like 11
four
kids?
Four or five.
Yeah, a lot.
Like
more. They were everywhere.
Right.
And he had her involved and put her to work feeding him and cleaning all the clothes.
Telling her all the lies about how she had all the kids and all the rest of it.
And this went on for months and months. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, she got her memory back.
Yeah.
And then she was upset. But then, you know what? When it's love, Dino. And
in the end.
Even with all of the kidnapping and the forced labor.
She circled back and went back to the family with the five kids that tormented her earlier in the movie.
And I bought it. You know, I was there crying. You know, hey, this is a beautiful moment. It's one of those things. When you think about a beautiful moment and a crying, a lot of times it happens when old Anxine plays and everybody's like, oh, they're remembering back. They're kind of thinking forward. It's New Year's Eve. And I think Chicago does it as well as anyone as far as trying to evoke the emotion, the memories in those kind of indigenous celebrations that we have. Mark Giangreco, longtime sports guy. I don't think anyone quarrels with the fact that he's been a sports and broadcasting mainstay here in Chicago for many, many years. He's a beloved personality, that's for sure. And then Janet Davies, I've had the opportunity to co-MC things with Janet. She's very nice. She's a great person and certainly a media personality in her own right. But she shines, I think, more than ever before on New Year's Eve when her and Mark Jinger get together. And it's kind of the greater than the sum of the parts thing, Dino, where I don't know if I had to think of two words, sparks fly.
Yeah, they're a good pairing. There's no question about that. I didn't see them last year, but I've seen them in the past together, and they seem to work well. So you know, this year's going to be no exception. They'll be out and about.
Now, where are they going to be? Because if you can see, and I think as everybody kind of progresses through life, you have at times as you're a kid, and then New Year's Eve is going on around you. Then you start to become the commander of your own little ship in the world, and then you can show up at your own Embassy Suites party with a balloon drop. Then maybe down the road you just progress to watching other people do it on television. You'll see a Dick Clark or a Ryan Seacrest. You know, and then we have our own local version where we, you know, because we're in a different time zone. You know, I'm not sure if you've given that consideration, but you get to see a little bit of the New York stuff.
Right. That's Ryan Seacrest will be doing the Dick Clark with Ryan Seacrest part, and then it'll come back locally once they get their thing done in New York. So
they have in New York the iconic. It's a Waterford Crystal thing, right? And it drops down,
yeah.
And as it
right
gets
Times Square,
yeah. Then once it hits, you know, wherever it's going to go, then it becomes the next year in New York. Do we have anything like? I know we had Chicago.
We had something.
Chi-Town Rising.
We had that star, right?
Yeah,
it was right outside of the old studio.
Yeah, the star went up.
Up.
Yeah. So I don't think we do that anymore. But the thing we still do have is Mark Giangreco and Janet Davies,
of course, and they will be out in beautiful Oak Brook, Illinois, at the. According to this, looks like they will be out in the Oak Brook Hills Resort and Conference Center out on Midwest Road in Oak Brook. So apparently tickets were still available as of what I looked at here. So
those are I think those are kind of fun. I mean, anytime you can add in, you know, a network broadcast into it, I think it adds a little element of fun. You get people in there, you get some. For me personally, it's not really something I would do only because it just seems, you know, with kids and everything like that.
Yeah.
They usually have. I mean, there's some kind of age limit to get in, and to doctor the kids up. They're so short.
try to sneak them in, right. You know, and have, for them to have a good time. It's yeah, I'd say it's probably not what you'd want to do, but it looks like the Rat Pack is back. We'll be performing.
Some classics.
8:30 to 12 a.m. is the time on this one, but I'm sure it'll go on after midnight. So
usually an open bar, some champagne. You've got the hats, the noisemakers, a streamer, maybe some balloons. This is, I think, these are essential ingredients for a great New Year's Eve party.
Yeah, and, you know, Channel 7's got people spread out all over the place. So that there's, you know, they'll be out in Oak Brook Hills, Mark and Janet, and then on the lake it'll be Val Warner and Ryan Shiverini. They'll be bringing in the New Year in the city at a theater on the lake.
Well, we'll have to check to see what the next WGN folks are doing.
Oh, yeah, and then the we'll check that out. I don't know. I haven't really gotten it.
But the other one is something that you see, you know, you see it on a regular basis. And so when it comes to parties, is that something that, like, do you know that I know you're going to get some hors d'oeuvres and do some things, you know?
Yeah, I'm going to do something in the afternoon tomorrow. My friend Bill Recchia and his wife Gina are putting something together. So we're going to, I'll be out there for a couple hours in the, they do something in the afternoon. I think then it just frees them up to do whatever they want on their own, you know, at night.
I'm asleep. Now, Dan Long is our producer, and he's a younger guy out there, you know, trying to enjoy a little bit of the New Year's Eve. But is it something that you look forward to doing, Dan, or do you feel any pressure to go out there and have fun?
Yeah, absolutely. The pressure is there. I always feel like it's going to be fun, and you kind of build up to it, and then it's like 2 days before and the panic sets in because you have no set plans, and it really sucks the joy out of it. Yeah.
I don't know. If I can give you any confidence, just to be confident that you don't need to feel any pressure. Just
do your thing, man. Just wherever you end up, you end up.
Yeah. And a lot of my, like, I'm at the point where a lot of my friends are either married or in longer term relationships, and I'm like one of the last guys holding out on the single express waiting for the chopper to come pick me up.
I like the way you describe that.
Well, I'm sure a lot of your friends, you know, they'll, as much as they may enjoy whatever their current situation is, that they would probably rather be in your shoes if they were honest.
If I just had the freedom, like Dan, to go wherever I want to go.
It's living the life. That's it. All right. So when we come back, we got a chance to hear a little bit about Kurt Russell. People seem to enjoy that. Michael Rooker. We got a chance to hear from him. When we come back from the news, we are going to have Lou Ferrigno, the Hulk. When you're the Hulk, right, that's pretty great.
Yeah, there's no question about it. That's that Lou Ferrigno, he was something else back in the...
And he still is.
Oh, he still is. Yeah, he's still there. I just said, you know, last time I think I saw him was... what movie was he in? Was it? I'm trying to think what movie.
Give it some thought.
And when you come back, I'll know what it is.
What was your first car? You rode a lot of bikes, obviously, but maybe traveling to competitions. What was the first car that you ever had?
You mean driving?
Yeah.
A green Beetle Volkswagen.
What?
Yes.
So a guy that's like 6'5" and
yes.
You had a Beetle.
I took out the front seat and sit in the back seat. It was a small car, but I just loved the Volkswagen. It was great. Hi, this is Lou Ferrigno. You're on the road with Dane, WGN Radio. Keep listening because you wouldn't like me when I get angry.
My bones against the wall, staring down an empty hall.
720 WGN, honored to have bodybuilding legend, Mr. America, Mr. Universe, actor, icon, the Hulk himself, an inspirational force for fitness, the one and only Lou Ferrigno. Lou, welcome to WGN.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. I think the world's going to be a little bit better as you get into Wizard World over here in Chicago. Talk a little bit about it. Obviously, people know you from the Hulk, and that's kind of the focus of the convention. But I'm sure you get fans from, you know, all other aspects from your bodybuilding days that come to see you.
Well, it's a great pop culture, and you got a big, huge fan base. They come from all over. Fans of bodybuilding, fans of us, you know, for comic books, and families of three different generations, because we have a photo up there. They have Q&A. But the greatest part about it, the fact that interacting with the fans, they get excited, they walk away with a smile on their face.
So you're bringing people smiles. You've also brought that message of fitness as you focused on the things that you were doing in your life, in your career, trying to be great. But you did it in such a public format, right? Bodybuilding at a time when it was kind of just bursting onto the scene. And then, of course, you know, whenever you're taking that role, that responsibility of an iconic cartoon character, comic comic book hero, you know, you're going to get that. We mentioned inspirational force, and I got to tell you, I was one of those kids, and I'm sure you hear it all the time, but it's great to say, is it was appointment television at a time when there wasn't a million channels out there. The Hulk was like our favorite show, like all of us.
Channel 247.
Yeah, right. There wasn't a ton. And so you had a lot of people that did that. But there was a lot of television shows we didn't like, but we absolutely loved The Hulk. Now, when you got it, you knew that you wanted to get into acting. You knew that this was an opportunity where you could let your physique and your body kind of lead the way into the path of an expanding career. But did you have any idea the impact that it was going to have on people?
No, I was hoping to get picked up as a series, but I had no idea that 40-some years later, now the biggest iconic Marvel hero. And now we have conventions. We have mecha movies. And you got all the A-list actors doing these films, like The Ventures and X-Men, all the characters. But you got to remember, when I began The Hulk, I was a pioneer. Because at the time, Captain America and Spider-Man failed as a TV series, so The Hulk became successful. So it basically laid the groundwork.
Well, you mentioned that because it isn't the kind of thing, you look at it now, those films dependent, completely dependent on like CGI, special effects, all the things that they can do. But you had to do this as a person. I got to think, like right now on the planet, and you can add to this, there wasn't another person that could have played that role, like physically, that could, because you still, even though it was a television show, you had to really be amazingly impressive as The Hulk.
Well, it was the perfect time and place because I was training for the Mr. Olympia competition in 1977, and the audition happened 6 weeks before I was going to compete, so I had to make the decision to give up bodybuilding to make this pilot, because I was trained a whole year to win the competition, and the rest is history. It was the perfect time and place, and it just, you couldn't pick a better time.
Well, you talk about some of the television stuff that you did, and it wasn't a natural transition. Now there are a lot of different ways for people to kind of get famous, a lot of avenues on the television side and things like that. The Hulk, not a lot of jokes written into the script of The Hulk, I don't think, but you mentioned, I read somewhere, Bill Bixby, one of our great television actors, and was a mentor for you. And not only did you have to bring the physical end of The Hulk into it, but you had to build in, there were a lot of those scenes where you built in either emotion or fear or empathy or some of those things. Did you feel like you really had to act? Obviously you had to be green and big and impressive and imposing, but were you working on your acting chops?
Well, it came naturally to me because it's called pantomime. I mean, acting without speaking, I was able to show the sensitivity for the character. And they always said to me, do your own thing, because it came natural to me. But I've learned a lot about acting after I was filming the series, because a lot of time when you take acting lessons, it's important to learn about pantomime, because pantomime, that's acting without speaking.
Right.
And showing the emotion. If you have no feelings, you can't show the emotions, you're not a good actor. So basically, it was a great training platform for me.
I think it was so important to the role and the success of the role, having people connect. I mentioned not a lot of jokes written into the Hulk script, probably, but one of our family's favorite shows was King of Queens,
yeah.
And that allowed you to really expand. Now, you're a funny guy, you got a great sense of humor. Did you feel that this would be a great way for you to show that to America, or was it just something that kind of, hey, I really like this?
Well, when they first mentioned about it to me, I said to myself, I'm playing myself. I said, why not give it a shot? Because I thought it was going to kind of limit typecast me, but the truth is that it's so well received that I did the movie called I Love You Man, and that took it to the next level, because you use your own personality. So I'm actually playing Lou Ferrigno besides the other acting role, and it works beautifully for comedy.
Yeah, no, it's great stuff, and it's wonderful to see that kind of thing happen. But I think that common thing is the inspiration out there, not only for kids to get fit, for kids to enjoy some of their favorite superheroes. You mentioned the Avengers. It's great to see that hold up, and you be a part of some of those and be revered with some of those films that are some of the biggest hits out there. Now, on the inspirational side, and this was another thing that went through it, is the Presidential's Council for Fitness. People can come down on whatever side they want on the politics side. I think one thing we all agree on is that that the kids are important, that health is important. It's so cool to see you, because you are, our fitness icon here in the United States, getting involved to try to take all those kind of lessons and benefits that you learned and bring them to the next generation when we need it most.
Exactly. That's why I like to be the head of it, because hopefully I'll be appointed by Trump. But I just know that there's too many kids out there. We have so much obesity here in America. And they need to educate these people, put them on the right direction to improve their health. Because we have a very lazy country, so many kids, so many people playing video games. But take some of that time, exercise, and sitting on the damn couch for hours playing video games and eating something that's unhealthy, like potato chips, hot dog or fattening food.
Now, do you think because of some of the stuff that you've done, obviously, with that platform, you've got just, you know, a great ability to affect some change. People think of the weightlifting side of it, but the nutrition side is so important, too, right?
Oh, yeah. Nutrition is like 75%, though. They have to educate them as well as nutrition-wise. A lot of times, it also depends on the environment they come from. So that's why, basically, if I educate them properly, they have a better understanding that you're getting a piece of paper, how to eat. It's all about dealing with your own personal issue.
I remember as a kid when they first instituted the Presidential Fitness Council, and it was so important for the listeners. It's the kind of thing that allows you, you know, we all enjoy gym class. It's fun to get out there and play games with your friends, but it sets goals. It kind of has aspirations in there. There's like, you know, some patch. I don't know what you'll do if you get to do it. I don't know what you'll do as far as some of the rewards, but it was neat because it set some goals out there nationally for people to go for.
Uh-huh. And it is important because life is all about your health. It's all about combining the mind and the body together, because if you haven't got your health, you have nothing.
Yeah, and people are going to see you here at Wizard World in Chicago, but also, too, keeping on the bodybuilding side, I will say that you, Arnold Schwarzenegger, a handful of people really brought it as a sport to the forefront through pumping iron and some of those. I mean, I got the chance to interview Jack LaLanne, who was one of those pioneers just in the thought process of weightlifting and that kind of stuff, and you took it to kind of a sport and a phenomenon, and you're continuing that, and you're going to keep some of those events going. You've got one, the Lou Ferrigno Legacy event. Talk a little bit about it.
Yeah, it's called the Ferrigno Legacy. It's in Palm Springs. It's a big, big bodybuilding competition. The IBB NPC, it's the classic, the physique, the bikini, and the fitness. Last year, we had over 500 competitors. But this year, we're going to have the expo called Flexpo. The whole convention center, we have over 300 booths. Have to do with anti-aging, supplement, work training, and everything. And it can be very entertaining. But the beauty about it, the fact that in the fitness industry now, we're talking about $3 billion a year when you think about equipment, about supplements. Everybody now wants to get on stage. We have different age group. Like, if you're 55, you're in good shape. Why not compete? Like, you're 65. So there's no limits.
Wow. Okay, so the full scope, bringing everything in from inspiring the kids all the way to the older generations, getting everybody involved. You've got the entertainment side. You've got the fitness side. You've got the supplements, the nutrition side, and all that. The Ferrigno Lexi, that's coming up in, is it Palm Beach that is coming up in November?
Palm Springs, November 18, 19. And when you think about 40-some years ago, they were just laughing at me when I talked about going to acting, like even back Arnold back then, the two of us, we did the movie Pumping Iron. So basically, we were probably the only two guys that have not gotten into football, pro football, because there was no money in bodybuilding. But because of our passion, my passion, I wanted to be an actor. So we were able to succeed because we were always stereotyped as the muscle-bound freak. That's the way we looked. But all that has changed now, because I was the first one to do the Incredible Hulk. And at the time, when I was on TV, people didn't believe the body was real. They thought it was like Bill Bixby with a jumpsuit pump.
But to take that, to push those envelopes and to change like all of the things that are going, and to create really a career that didn't exist, right? No, you were kind of pioneers and trendsetters.
But the most important thing is my passion. When you're passionate about something, embrace it, because you can't listen to the naysayers saying, like when I was young growing up as a kid, I was always condemned for working out. I would talk about bodybuilding, barbells, and dumbbells, and everybody made fun of me because people would say to my father, "What's wrong with your son? All he talks about is weightlifting and working out." And they just laughed. But if I didn't embrace my passion, I wouldn't be where I am today.
Nope. An inspirational force that's getting out there and doing all sorts of things here at Wizard World in Chicago now and all around the country. For this show, we talk about kind of transformational travel. If you get to be for the President's Council, if you lead that, you know, for children nationwide, you'll travel all over. I'm sure through your career with the competition, certainly the acting and the movies, you've seen the country. Where are some places that you know, a kid from the East Coast gets to travel the country? Mm-hmm. Where are some of your favorite places where you get out there and it's unexpected? Maybe you got some things you didn't expect from the people.
Well, especially being home in California, because a lot of time I ride a bicycle on the beach every day, and you have no idea what I encounter on the beach. I mean, people see me riding the bicycle.
That's pretty great, though.
What bothers me is that every quarter of a mile, I smell marijuana. People laying on the beach, smoking a joint, not exercising, and just laying there being lazy. But the ones who do exercise on the bicycle path, working out, so that's what I'm talking about. We have to get more of these people, these lazy people, get them off their butt and get exercise.
Get them motivated, get them healthy, follow in your footsteps, and of course follow you to Wizard World. Well, Lou, before we let you go, talk if you've got any social media so people can follow all your adventures, a website where people can get involved and find out about
FerrignoFit.com.
FerignoFit.com.
You got it.
All right, see him here in Chicago. See him all over the place and all around the country in schools, hopefully coming soon. The one and only Lou Ferrigno. Thanks for being on WGN
Thank
today.
You.
WGN high atop Chicago Allstate Skyline Studio here on New Year's Eve. Happy New Year, everybody. Dino Tiberi to my left, Dan Long in the booth. And we heard from Adam Rank a little earlier in the program. You know him from the NFL Network, but also he is a podcaster. He's a very successful podcast about fantasy football, as if, you know, the normal NFL season didn't have enough to offer you, especially at a time when, you know, the Bears, the local team, is doing really, really well. People are excited about it. But for whatever it is, and I don't know, and I know there's, I think there's a fantasy version of almost anything, right? But fantasy football is the kind of thing that people have been doing, or even getting in on your, whether it's an office pool or some kind of situation where you want to try to predict or capitalize on what's going to happen and follows either statistics, the wins, the losses, or the player performance and those kind of things. Dino, when it comes to fantasy football, you've been doing it for
I've been doing it for over 30 years, and one of them, it's been...
That was back when, like, when did it even get created?
Well, I think it was around that time. We were doing ours on paper forever, and it was when I started at my first real job out of college, working for an insurance company. A couple guys apparently had known about it. I wasn't really aware of it at the time, you know, how it started and all that, but they were like, yeah, we're going to get a fantasy football league together, and this is how it works, and so we had a draft, and... or an auction that we did, and we've been doing it ever since. Not all of us. There were 10 to begin with, obviously, and then we've had, I think there's 3 of us that have been, have made it all the way through since the beginning.
How would, of course, you have to deal with whatever happens, right? And sometimes things don't, as far as the performance doesn't, you know, add up to whatever you're predicting, you think's going to happen. A defense that's supposed to be good can give up a bunch of points. But what? How does it work when it comes to, you know, situations that are uncontrollable, like the weather? This is the anniversary of the famous Fog Bowl.
That's right, 30 years ago.
And if you're you know, a devotee of the Bears, it all worked out okay, right? You won the game. But it was the Eagles.
Yeah.
I mean, they still talk about this as like the giant robbery of the franchise.
Yeah, the Bears were winning the game 17-6, and then the fog rolled in. The wind shifted. It came. The fog was out over the lake. The wind shifted, brought the fog back onto land, and it went from being able to see just fine to not being able to see 5 feet in front of you. And there were the purists. You know, a lot of people were calling for the game to be canceled or to be stopped and then restarted, you know, once the fog had cleared. But I think, you know, the league decided they were already pot committed, as they say, to it, and they just played it all the way out. And it's still legendary. It was against the Eagles. Buddy Ryan was the coach of the Eagles after he left the Bears. He was the head coach at the time.
So there was
a lot of things going on.
A lot of acrimony,
right.
A lot of tension filled because, you know, unlike, and when we talked with Adam a little bit, one of the things that people, I think, are enjoying about this Bears team is that offense, defense, you know, the defensive players are getting in plays on offense. Everybody seems to be on the same page and really enjoying each other.
Yeah.
At least from the coaching staff perspective for that 85 team, there were two camps. It was this one, and they not get along at all.
Right. And Buddy Ryan, you know, I did one point, Ditka said, why are you killing my, you know, offense? Because the defense was so dominant, the offense couldn't get the plays run they needed to run in practice. So, you know, Ditka and Ryan were, you know, back and forth with each other during that season. And then, you know, as then Buddy left and he went to the Eagles. And, of course, then the Fog Bowl was 3 years later. So, but, yeah, the 30th anniversary, that's New Year's Eve. So we're in it.
312-91-7200. When it comes to kind of crazy weather games, and maybe it's just because we're here, so we don't. What are some other crazy weather? Because I remember the Monsoon Bowl that again happened right here, Soldier Field.
Yeah,
it was a Halloween night, Bears versus Packers.
Oh, that was when they retired Dick Butkus and Gale Sayers' numbers, and they were out there in ponchos, and it was pouring down rain.
It was as bad as the weather could be.
And I mean, so famous that it's known as. But are there other games? There's got to be, right? Some. I remember there was a.
Well, the Ice Bowl, of course. That you know that one. That's a famous one. That's the Green Bay and Dallas back in the '60s. Yeah, with Bart Starr sneaking it in at the end of the game to
the Jerry Kramer with the arms out.
Finally scoring a touchdown to put the Packers to win the game and put them in another Super Bowl. So
they had said too that I guess they had some kind of warmer under the field for that, and either it was too cold, malfunction, or whatever, and so the field was actually ice.
Yeah, it was. What I read on about that was that. Vince Lombardi was very proud of the fact that they had got these coils or whatever underneath the field to keep the field playable when it got cold. And for whatever reason, maybe when it's 15 below wind chill, the temperature was below zero that day. And, you can't predict that. I mean, it just didn't work. And so the people were sliding on. Nobody could get any traction, but they did score, I think. If I remember right, Dallas scored on like a halfback option pass, which, a trick play. And then the Packers came down and scored that final drive and got the job done. But, yeah, that's the most famous weather bowl I can think of outside of the Fog Bowl.
And so you can't necessarily factor that into the fantasy football world, or maybe you do.
Well, you can't really, because it's pure statistics. It's pure, it's just like if you bet on a game and, One year, I think we had a wager on the over in a game that was being played in Kansas City. Well, we didn't look at the weather. You bet the over, and the score was like 9-6. because it was a monsoon the whole game. It rained just like you were talking about. It poured the whole time, and neither team could move the ball.
So you do have to kind of factor that.
Yeah,
into
you have to look at all the
Tom
stuff.
Tom Skilling in on, well, on the game.
Yeah, you've got to sit down and look at all that, all the things that might factor in. When you're talking about weather, when you're talking about, how healthy your quarterback is, there's a lot of things that you have to look at before you put your lineup together when at the end of the week, that once the games are being played. And now with Thursday night games, you've got to have that stuff sooner. I mean, you basically Tuesday morning, you're looking at, stuff, and then Thursday there's a game already. So you have to. It's a lot different than it used to be when the games were just played on Sundays and Mondays. So
I don't know, how has the fantasy football world, because now it's gotten to the point where easily online or computer, even on your phone,
right,
everything gets tabulated. You don't have to add anything up. And
yeah.
Dan, you do fantasy football as well. I mean, I know a lot of people do, but you're in on a league as well, right?
Yeah. And I'm fascinated in, like Dino was talking about, how everything had to be kind of tabulated manually.
We did that with the USA Today, Dan. It was myself and another guy, my buddy Brian, initially, and then I passed it along to somebody else in the league to do later.
So you had to take,
the box scores from the papers, and I literally cut them out and put them on a piece of paper so I could check, because we had to do all 10 teams. You added up all the statistics, and then you just basically, where you fell in each category. We had 10 categories, including the individual defensive players, which was well ahead of a lot of time at that point. Not a lot of people were doing individual players. They were doing just defenses. So we had to add up tackles, interceptions, sacks.
Aww. Dan, think about this. Yeah. Like, how many people would actually be doing it if it was that much work?
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's if you were a commissioner of a league, that's like a full-time job
It basically was, and I was lucky that I had a part-time job at the time that I was at a desk, so I was able to work that in when things were a little slow at the Park District. So, I could do that stuff on a Monday night when I would work, and I'd get it done. But, yeah, it got to be – we were trying to get it automated for the longest time, and finally we did. We got out of ESPN, and we figured out how to get the defensive players, because that was the biggest thing. We couldn't do the defensive players. And they didn't have it initially online like they do now. There's a million apps out there.
Now you look at CBS Sportsline or some of those things where you could easily, they kind of manage all of your, even if it's just a confidence pool where you're picking, 1 through 15 or whatever. Yep. And they've got it now. You put it all in, it tabulates it all. It keeps the stats of everybody.
Oh, it's amazing.
So
I mean,
easy.
I'm in one right now where you're picking the confidence for the each week. And it's all right in front of you. You got everybody's picks right in front of you. You know who's where you stand for the season, where you stand for the week. They have all the results of the games that are live, so when a score happens, it flips the score. You automatically get an update, so you know exactly where you're at. And it's amazing how that stuff's progressed over the years from where we started.
So, Dan, how did you end up? I mean, the season is kind of ended right now because
it's over
last
with.
Week. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Dan, how did you do?
Well, this was my, not that anyone cares, because my number one rule of fantasy football during the year is nobody cares about your fantasy football team. That being said, I did finish. This is my best finish ever in the current league that I'm in. I was one game over 500.
Yeah, that's good.
I mean, it's got to be so hard. I mean, it's got to be so hard. It's just a whole level of participation.
You've got to put the time in and look at everything, and that's the hardest thing. And for me, it's, you know, I just didn't. This year was one of those years where I got to a semifinals in two of them, and that was as far as I got.
So you're playing multiple leagues?
Three. Yeah, two, and what it is one I've been in forever. That's the one I was talking about earlier, and then these other two have been with, you know, more recent. You know, I joined like within the last, you know, 7 or 8 years. So
wow, okay, yeah. Well, congratulations on of course Dino and for Dan and for the listeners too. Dino also does a college football one where he picks like the winners of 40 different bowl games.
Yeah, it's that Bowl Mania that ESPN does, and where you pick the 40 games and you have a confidence pool for that, and so. I've won it in the past a couple times, but this year was a disaster. So
this year's a disaster. It's in the past, almost in the rearview mirror.
That's
as
right.
It is New Year's Eve. Looking forward to 2019. We're going to talk about some of the top stories of this year when we come back. /7:20. WGN High atop Chicago Allstate Skyline Studio. It is Dane here with you until 5 a.m. On New Year's Eve. And Dino Tiberi is also here when it comes to Nick DiGilio show, which we're sitting in for. You think about that, you know, you're the nephew, right, of Larry from Aurora. I think it's important to say it every time, you know, regardless. And it never fails. People will text in with supportive things or even call in. To talk about your uncle, what a big part of, you know, is that's a little bit, you know, we all try to, I guess, have some sort of impact either on our families or whatever, right? And your uncle had, was he aware that he was as popular, I guess, as he was?
I think when we went to that Bruinville, he found out because it was all live. They were all there and they were all coming up to talk to him. And if he didn't know it before that, I think that's when they gave him a standing ovation.
Were you a little shocked?
Or
did you kind of have
figured out? I kind of thought that might be what happened because of the fact that I listened to, you know, a lot of times when he called in and, you know, and Nick really liked him. So, I mean, I wasn't really surprised at all. I mean, it was kind of cool. It was made me feel, you know, good because, you know, being his nephew and, you know, that it was good for him because, you know, he had some health issues and some things he was going through, and that was a good thing for him to do and be there. So it was good. It was, you know, we enjoyed it.
Been brought up a couple times today as affinity for wrestling. Also was noted.
He was a huge fan of wrestling, and you know, and he had that one picture. I still think of the picture when he had it was in the wrestling pose. It's kind of frightening, but
well, if you were his opponent,
yeah. It's true.
Well, as we kind of look back, and one of the things also that that Nick loves his listeners get to experience on a regular basis is lists. And this is the kind of list that it's always kind of sad to look back, but it also is, I think, an opportunity for us to kind of, you know, remember some of these people have been maybe out of the limelight for a while, and then you kind of, you know, unfortunately, because of their passing, you're able to at least, you know, recognize and kind of respect the contribution that they made. And it always happens, right? The last couple days of 2018, everybody kind of looks back and says, well, okay, here's the people that we've lost. Dan has printed up a list for us. So we're going to go through some of the highlights here as far as, you know, there's a lot of people that get lost. Not everybody makes it into the, they're not headliners when it comes to being lost. In January, it's Dolores O'Riordan, singer-songwriter of the Irish band The Cranberries. I remember when this happened. This was a shock. She was relatively young, 46, and she drowned accidentally in a hotel bath. Who's to say exactly what other kind of health problems? But so that was something. In February, Billy Graham. Now, Billy Graham was a guy, very old.
99.
Right. I mean, if you could sign up for 99, people would do it. And so, and he led an amazing life and an amazing career and had such an impact. He was a guy that was involved, at least on the political side too, in a bunch of different ways. So he wasn't just a religious leader, but he was also a leader of a lot of leaders, you know, and he was the guy that would be helping to swear people in, you know, whether it's presidents and things like that, a huge impact, Billy Graham.
Yeah, he was involved in a lot of different things. And, you know, you always saw him on TV. And, you know, my dad would talk about him a lot. And, you know, it was hard not to know who he was.
Yep.
Really.
Is a U.S. preacher, Billy Graham, spearhead of a worldwide evangelical Christian movement and spiritual counsel to several U.S. presidents, passed away at 99. And then you go into, okay, March, French fashion designer Givenchy, famous for the little black dress, died in his sleep, age 91. So these people are living a pretty long life. And then here's a guy that had as many challenges on the physical side as you could imagine, but still was recognized not only as, you know, an icon, right, but the smartest man in the universe,
yeah,
right? Stephen Hawking.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think that, you know, pretty amazing stuff. I mean, he was, you know, with all the things that were going on physically in his life, to be able to have that, kind of an impact is pretty cool.
And not to be kind of like weighed down by all those challenges for a lot of people, just to deal with, you know, what he was going through would be tough just to
right
stay positive and survive. But yet he kind of always moved forward his theories and was kind of sharing a lot of things on the intellectual and the educational side. And it's I mean, I think it's pretty amazing, right? Because yeah, he would make cameos in movies. He was in The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Stephen Hawking.
There he is.
Yeah. And he got to be, I think, with his challenges, 76, I think, was a pretty good run. April, let's see, Winnie Mandela, former wife of Nelson Mandela, anti-apartheid icon in her own right, died in a hospital, age 81, after a long illness, so lost her. Let's see.
Barbara Bush.
Barbara Bush. Okay, so, and I think the last time that we had done this, we lost Carrie Fisher. And then who was Carrie Fisher's?
Debbie Reynolds.
Debbie Reynolds, right. You know, a famous actress in her own right. And she died in a short period of time after, and I think we had some doctors on to talk a little bit about that phenomenon for the broken heart. And I, when you have people that have been together, life partners for 50, 60, you know, as many years as possible, you often see one that is perfectly healthy kind of go downhill, and within a matter of, sometimes it's, you know, a year or so, sometimes less, you know, sometimes
it's a lot less than that. Yep.
Yeah. And so you had these guys, you know, the Barbara Bush and H.W. Bush, they were together. I don't know if they were married 70 plus years, but certainly an entire lifetime together, over 90, both of them. And they were both lost this year. But so Barbara Bush, she was considered, you know, on the first lady side, you know, she was like impactful. I mean, in a time when you didn't always see that. I don't know that all the, was it Nancy Reagan? Was that the first, you know, one of those first, I mean, you can go back, I guess, and I don't even know what I'm saying.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's, you know, I think they've had varying degrees of influence.
Influence and the kind of official roles.
Right, where you would hear, you know, some more than others, and you know, I think each one of them did it in their own way, but it was just how much was it for, how involved were each one, were they involved with their, you know, that time, so.
So you go 92, you know, living a very long, full life, you know, part of, I think, American culture for a long time. And then you go, still in April, Swedish superstar DJ Avicii. His real name was Tim Bergling. He was found dead in Muscat, age 28. And was he one of the ones? And I think we'll see a sort of a pattern here with some of these. Where was it, suicide? Was it one of those where he, you know, took his own life? Who knows?
Right? That's the whole thing. And that guy was really talented. I mean, you know, I announced basketball games for high school. I use a lot of his music at timeouts and different things, and it's, you know, that's kind of shocking that he's passed away at the age of 28.
Yep. Then you go into June. American handbag designer Kate Spade committed suicide at the age of 55, and I think that's one of the things that, as we look back to, is that a lot of awareness has been raised about suicide in general, and over the course of, you know, the last handful of years, I think there's been a number of high profile, you know, Robin Williams comes to mind for sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, you look at this, it's really difficult to look at, and it's got to be scary. I think you try to explain it to the kids and, you know, you're like, well, there's never, you know, any reason, but you can always talk to us. Obviously you want to be able to share that and kind of work through it. But you look at, and I think on the adolescent side or kids, you can sort of see in those teen years people feeling insecure, maybe put in a position or bullying or some of the situations that we see in the news. But when you have somebody that has, at least on paper, like everything going for them. You know, right. They have a great family. They have, you know, the great relationships, the career success. They have all the dollars that you could want. And that's usually people look at as kind of a key to, even though we know that that can't be it, but the happiness. And these are the people that are so upset or so sad that they're taking their own lives. It's hard to make sense of it.
Yeah, it doesn't add up. I mean, it just, but hey, we don't know the underlying issues. And sometimes that's something that may have stemmed from, something a long time ago that just came to fruition. So,
yep.
That's just the way it is.
And a few days after that, and I don't know if how connected it might have been or maybe not at all, but it was still right in there. And I think we talked about it at the time, too. Anthony Bourdain, 61. Again, this is another guy that's, at the very top of his field, successful program, successful career, all the financial success that you would want. And then still, I don't know if I've ever aspired to be a handbag designer. But for like Anthony Bourdain, you look at what he did. It was make television shows about traveling the world, meeting people, enjoying great food, those right. experiences. It seems like
what could be wrong there?
It seems like even what he was doing outside of the success attached to it was pretty great. A lot of people would love to be doing that. And so when you have it where he finds himself in a position where suicide is the way out, it's just, it's troubling. It's something that really doesn't make a ton of sense. We're going to take a break. It is about 16 minutes after 4 right now. When we come back, we're going to run through some of the people that we've lost in 2018. We'll go into some of those. 312-981-7200. If you have any you want to make sure of, let's say we forgot them or you think that they deserve a little extra attention, you can definitely text in or call in with that. It's Dane here on 720 WGN. WGN, we are here until 5 a.m. It is New Year's Eve, Daniel, with you in for Nick DiGilio. I do have Dino Tiberi to my left, Dan Long in the booth as well. And we're running through, it's one of those things, the list, and it's, the end of 2018, and we kind of take that retrospective look back into the people that we've lost along the way. And it's always surprising that, if we sat here and said, okay, well, who was it? We'd think of maybe a person, 2, 3, 5, maybe.
Yeah.
And as you go through the list, you're like, oh, yeah, I
forgot
wow.
about that person.
Yeah. And it's, some huge names, icons in their industries. Aretha Franklin is one.
Yeah, Aretha Franklin, respect. She performed for a long time. I mean, she died at the age of 75 from cancer. She had an 8-hour funeral attended by a lot of former presidents, stars, and musical royalty.
Well, that's what you've got there. But also, too, is if you remember, now that I'm thinking about it, and she knew how to do it right. I don't know that I'd ever have, maybe down the road, to plan my own funeral services. Is that something that you'd ever consider doing? Like, here's what you need to do, because if you're John McCain, and we're going to talk about him in a little bit too,
right?
Where you've got this whole state funeral thing, where you've got to do one in your home state, one at the Capitol.
Sure, there's got to be a lot more planning involved than that.
A lot more planning. I don't know if I could do that. I'd almost, but then again, you think, well,
I might want to make it easier for the people when I'm gone to take care of all the arrangements and all that.
So maybe a little bit of planning on this. But Aretha Franklin, you got to give it to her, an entertainer, a showwoman.
Yep.
From the get-go, she did, I think she did either 2 or 3 costume changes during her funeral, where I think she had one gown on, and then the next day she had a different gown on, and maybe, a separate situation. I think she did a few costume changes.
Yeah. Wow. That's a lot. That's really going above and beyond.
I mean,
for me,
it's a little.
For me, when it's over, it's over. That's it.
Well,
you get what you get. Well, there you are.
You're not Aretha Franklin.
Of course not. Nope.
But that's a little bit, if I was going to, the costume, it's a little gruesome, right? If, let's say you're the guy who's got to, prepare the person, it just seems like it'd be more, I don't know. I guess that's just me. Maybe an extra shawl or something. Anyway.
She wants a full costume change. What the?
She did. Yes, she did. And then, also in August, we lost John McCain, U.S. Republican senator, Vietnam War hero, 2-time presidential candidate, died 81 following a year-long battle with brain cancer. And this was, and we talk about planning, you know, your services out. One side of it would be to take a little bit of the load off of your family members, right? Plus also, yeah, is it, you know, you get to a point where it's going to happen. It's going to be a public thing. You might as well have it be the way that you want it. I just don't know that I could sit down and write it all out. Of course, for me, it wouldn't necessarily matter, but it looked as though he was trying to make, you know, some statements politically as well. You know, he on purpose didn't invite the president. He didn't invite Donald Trump to it. And then kind of, you know, whether it was the speakers that he had in there and the friends that he had, not only showcased, you know, his service on the military side, but also ways that he was able to bring people from both parties together, like on purpose, you know, and trying to take some of the partisan out. It seemed as though that was sort of the higher purpose of the service. He was doing some of those things.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that there was a lot of thought that went into that whole process. And looked like, you know, I didn't see much of the proceedings, but sound like it all went out off without a hitch. So,
you know, you're like, I didn't see much of it.
I didn't see
looked
much
like
of
it went off without a hitch. No, it was pretty.
I didn't
big,
hear
though.
Anything about it. So
well, it was like three nonstop days.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I didn't hear any backlash. Is what I'm saying.
Oh, right. Okay.
I knew what was going on. I just didn't. I didn't have time to watch it.
I guess whatever. Yeah, whatever you're into. And I don't even remember if there was a funeral for this, but I think that you could think of a lot of, you know, kind of fun things to build into it. But Burt Reynolds, best known for his Alpha Male roles in the 70s, 80s, died at age 82 after a heart attack. He looked, if you got a chance to see him in some of those appearances that he had coming up to, you know, maybe like 6 months before, and he looked really frail.
He looked drawn. Yeah, you're right, he did.
But this was a guy that was... He was an every guy's guy, and some of those movies, they were, when it comes to whether it's the 70s or, you know, he was like the top. Was he like the most, what would you call it, the biggest box office, like, celebrity of the
I
time?
I think he was one of the biggest box office draws in the 70s and early 80s, certainly, because those movies were all popular and people, you know, flocked to go see them when they were released. But, you know, after that, I'm trying to think of some of his later roles. I know he was.
I don't think there
were. He was in Mystery Alaska.
Oh, right. Oh yeah. Right. He did some TV for sure.
Yeah, and he did some other parts. You know, were smaller. And
was he in Heat of the Night? Was he in that?
The movie or the show?
Was that like a TV show or something?
TV show was that Carol O'Connor was in that movie or in the show.
We'll look it up. But I thought he did some. He did some television, and I think it was relatively acclaimed. I know that. He did some TV stuff, but known for, you know, obviously Cannonball Run.
Smokey and the Bandit.
Smokey and the Bandit was his big.
Deliverance, probably, he was in that.
That was a good, yeah.
Yeah. A lot, he was in a lot of different movies. You know, those were all and again, they were all popular in the 70s and 80s, certainly.
Yeah, big star. Burt Reynolds, and like a really cool guy. We talked with Blake a little bit earlier about just, you know, what makes a movie star, and he was that guy. So he came in, he was Burt Reynolds. You know, maybe there was a role that he was playing within that movie, but it was obvious that that's who he was. He didn't blend into the role. another important guy we lost in October, Paul Allen. He was a co-founder of Microsoft with Bill Gates and later a billionaire and philanthropist. He died from cancer at age 65. So relatively young, you know, and this is a guy, whenever you look at like a Steve Jobs or you look at Paul Allen, some of these people that are like billionaires.
Right.
And you find them with health difficulties that, you know, that we have family members or that any of us could find ourselves facing. And if they can't buy their way out of it, then it just can't be done.
And that's what it is. Unfortunately, you know, you can have all the money in the world, but when, you know, it's when the time comes. And so, you know, that couldn't help them there, unfortunately.
So, and they did with Microsoft, obviously the personal computer, you know, so much about what it is that we do and how we do things on the tech side. Those guys were a big part, whether it was things that they invented, you know, there's, you know, in a garage somewhere, or things that they helped bring to the marketplace and kind of, you know, as far as mass marketing, bring it to where it is part of everything that we do. Some really important things when it comes to entertainment. We did lose Stan Lee. Now, Stan Lee, 95, that's a pretty good run. You know, when you're 95, you'll be thinking, let's just extend this a little bit. But at this point, 95 seems pretty great. And he was a guy
that's a full life right there in 95. Wow.
Creating, you know, characters and action heroes and comic book stars, you know, Spider-Man, Hulk, Iron Man, X-Men, Black Panther. This was a guy, and he'd be the first to tell you that he was part of a team, right? He didn't do everything in his entire world independently. But a big part of like a lot of the stuff that even, you know, we're enjoying today.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. My brother's a big comic book guy, and you know, I can remember seeing piles of comic books at home, and you know, and a lot of them were the ones that Stan Lee put together. You know, all these, you know, the ones that they're mentioned here: Spider-Man, Hulk, Iron Man, X-Men, and you know, and most recently Black Panther. You know, these are all movies now that were adapted from the comic books, and pretty impressive career for Stan Lee.
We're gonna talk about some of the things that he was able to do, and some of the other people. I think the last one on our list is George H.W. Bush, age 94, months after his wife of 73 years. If you can,
yeah, married. That's amazing.
You know, the first year, I think year one is paper, right? And then yeah. I think the, you know, the 40 years is that like the ruby anniversary, and the golden anniversary is 50 years. What's 73, Dino?
73 is a long time. That's all I know. No, what is it? Do you know what it is?
I don't even know.
I don't know.
They got to stop it.
75 would have been the next one, but...
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Silver anniversary, the gold anniversary.
Well, it's kind of a downer to like talk about all the people that we've lost, although we're obligated to do that because you want to be able to kind of reflect back on everything sure. that they did and meant. But we're going to look forward, and when it comes to forward, tonight is New Year's Eve. We're going to talk about some ways that people are going to celebrate. I know, Dino, you're going to pull up some of the things we're going to see on WGN-TV and some of our news personalities that are out and about in the community, helping to kind of MC, kind of ringmaster net our way into the new year.
One more we forgot to mention was Penny Marshall.
Oh, that's right. Okay, very recently.
Yeah, just recently, within the last, 10 days or so. Amazing career of hers. She, you know, was a director. She was an actor. Laverne and Shirley, you know, obviously
she was a DeFazio.
Yep. You know, League of Their Own. That was, she was involved in that. And, you know, there's a lot of different, she was involved in a lot of different things. So, you know, another one we went on to mention before, we got through the list there. So,
yep. Okay. Yep. That's another one. It's an opportunity to look back. And then now we're going to start to look forward and figure out the best ways to kind of pay tribute to 2018 and get ourselves on the celebration side into 2019. So stay tuned for that when we come back. WGN high atop Chicago Allstate Skyline Studio. It is New Year's Eve here in Chicago. Dane with you until 5 a.m. I do have Dino Tiberi with me, Dan Long in the booth. And this is the time. This is like the calm before the celebration storm, right? Where people are trying to figure out exactly, you know, what they're going to do in order to enjoy and kind of shepherd in. Maybe just blast their way into 2019. Who knows? Now, here's the thing. We've got a great backdrop. You're going to have maybe a Mark Giangreco and a Janet Davies and a Navy Pier or out in Oak Brook or something like
sure,
that.
Sure, they're going to be all over the place.
If you could have the perfect setting for your New Year's Eve and maybe have the sun, the surf, the sand, and maybe Matt Boland there with you. He is, of course, the executive chef and director of food and beverage for the Hilton Aruba. Matt, welcome to WGN.
Hey, good morning. How you guys doing up there?
Well, we're not doing not as well as you are. Number one, you're a couple hours further along into getting ready to celebrate into 2019. Plus, you're in Aruba.
It's nice and warm down here. Still a little dark, but we're getting ready, as you said, for the big crush today. Everybody's going crazy here.
Everyone's going to be, and you are going to be the guy that's going to help make that crazy work, right? Because you're the ones, you know, as far as like the food and the drink and the things that are going to be the kind of vehicles for enjoyment, you're going to be right there for you. Is there anything different? Because I got to think, when you're in Aruba on vacation, it's always great. You're always going to want to have great stuff around. In everybody's vacation, they're celebrating typically something. How do you step it up for a New Year's Eve?
Well, you know, New Year's Eve is a real special time here. The Arubans are really great. They take this very seriously. It's like everybody goes nuts. Everybody wants to eat. I'll be working all day. Well, I won't be home till probably 2 minutes after midnight, hopefully. And it's like everybody wants to eat. Everybody wants to go out. Everybody, you know, you don't know in Aruba they blow off like 10 container loads of fireworks here at New Year's. It's like crazy, crazy down here.
Yeah, go big or go home, right?
That's
some good stuff.
Well, okay, so, man, here's the thing, is there are certain things about, and I talked with, when we had Dave Hammond, a guy that you know and our mutual friend, is when you think of certain places, you just have a mental picture of what it is. And when I think of Aruba, I think of a beach and a palm tree, and I'm sure there's plenty of that there. But he had mentioned that there are things about Aruba that set it apart and make it different and unique, and we had a few callers calling as well. So if you had to describe it as a guy who knows other places and certainly knows Aruba, what is it about Aruba that makes it special?
Well, first I got to say, it's the people. It's, you know, that's how Aruba really became famous. I first came here in the 80s, and they just love to show you around the island. They're friendly. They speak all the languages. It's really a great, great, you know, bunch of people. And, of course, it's the weather, the sand, like you say. You know, I mean, it barely ever rains here. You know, it's like all the way down the Southern Caribbean, there's no hurricanes. We have sometimes they threaten the hurricanes. They come close, and we're all scared. But we're really blessed down here. It's just, like you say, it's the water temperature, the fish, the ocean, the people, and the attitude down here. You know, it's just a great place to be. I got my family here, you know. I mean, I came here in the 80s. My first daughter was born here, and, you know, I got kids, grandkids here. I'm part of the island now, you know?
Well, you know, okay, so, and let's get a little bit of background on Matt Bowen. Let the listeners know we're talking with Matt Bowen, executive chef, food and beverage director for the Hilton Aruba, and, you know, getting to work with a ton of chefs over the years and talk with them and their careers. A lot of them, you know, go to amazing places, but then they'll kind of bounce around. You know, they'll be at different places around. Hilton certainly has properties everywhere. What was it about? First off, where did you come from? Obviously, you know, probably a place with worse weather. And then what made you decide to just stay there and raise your family in Aruba?
Okay, long story, man, long story. It's, you know, I came out, I'm upstate New York, you know, from Canandaigua, Rochester area. And then I moved to Ithaca, New York, where, you know, Cornell University is. And we had a 4-star French restaurant there. The guy owned DVDV Hotels here, and he started them in like the late to the early 70s, I guess. But, you know, I came down here, and like I say, I ended up getting married and never looked back. You know, when I was younger, you know, I traveled around a lot. You know, I lived in Paris, went to France. I was in Ithaca for 10, 15 years. But now that I'm old, you know, older, you know, we ended up coming back down here in 93, my kids were all young. And, you know, once you got kids and they're in school, it's not as it's not good to travel around so much. And, you know, who would leave Aruba? I came back in 93, and, you know, I've been here ever since. And, like I say, I wouldn't change it for the world. You know, it's one of the best islands that I know, you know, living here for a long time. So
Matt, for those people out there that are looking at in 2019, people are going to be part of their resolutions. And when we talked about it a couple days ago, people were saying like they wanted to like travel. You know, that's one of the things that they're looking to do. If you had to describe, you know, Aruba as far as, is it, you know, is the dollars, can you use that as far as the language? I know the people are warm and inviting and friendly. Certainly, you know, Hilton, you guys have everything that you would expect to be able to accommodate people. But as far as, like, if people did want to get down there and check out the rest of the island, how does it work as far as, you know, working in the culture?
Well, I'm pretty sure, you know, they just started with a couple of direct flights from Chicago just last week. And so, you know, sometimes you got to take a couple of flights. It takes a while to get here. But, I mean, if you get a direct flight down, it's fantastic. It's dollars. Everybody takes dollars. Everybody on the island speaks, like, 4 languages. Like, my kids speak 4 languages. So, you know, they're certainly the most hospitable and friendly and nice people that we know. In Hilton, we got it right in the middle of the Strip. It's like one of the oldest hotels. They call it the Grand Dame. It opened in 1957. course, been through a bunch of renovations, and we got this prime steakhouse. I know you guys are a steak town, so I use the best prime and dry aged meat. That I got a pretty famous steakhouse down here, and it's really a great place to come. I mean, you can drive anywhere. It's safe. It's like it's just one of the best places. And listen, I will personally show you around. That's what to the Aruban culture, that's what you do when people come. You take them out and we call it the Kanuku, out in the bush, and it show you all. I mean, there's all kinds of off the wall places to eat and all kinds of the tradition and culture of Aruba, which each island is unique. It's like each island has their own little things and how it evolved, but Aruba has some wonderful traditions, and I took David around, man. We went to some fine dining establishment.
Yeah, he was saying that not only did you take him around on the food side to check it out, but if you know David, he's also kind of an archaeologist, right? He's always trying to get into the ancient, artifacts and things like that, and you showed him some things there too.
Yeah, the thing is, like, when you live here for a while, you don't go to those places, and it's like, he wanted to go to the cave, so I'm like, okay, all right, let's do that. I hadn't done that in, like, 20 years, and we actually saw some incredible stuff, some Indian cave drawings that were, like, 2,000 to 4,000 years old, and then some graffiti, graffiti everywhere. But the graffiti from 1800s, like the first guy people who came to Aruba and went in his cave, it gives me when I show people around, it gives me an opportunity to experience the island from the tourist side. So that's cool.
It's hard to like make that distinction, right? When the graffiti's from the 1800s,
what would be an example of something they had as graffiti?
Well, they had. I mean, and this guy told us they have guys standing out there to give you like a little tour, of the caves. They tell you this guy was one of the first like governors of the island or the mayor. They say they measured the cave and they have these little. I don't know what drawings of how they measured the cave and how big it was. Then I took them to some off the wall food places, which was was great. Like fried ribs and chicken and bananas and Johnny cakes. And again, we don't do that all the time either, because this place is only open like 9 p.m. till 3 a.m. But Aruba's like. Go ahead.
No, that's your prime time right there. 9 p.m. to 3 a.m. Yeah. That's been your hours.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
But what time is it? Oh, it's 2:15. We can get in there now.
Yeah. But that's like today is going to be just like they do have an incredible tradition here. The traditions, like I say, are as this has become my home, for so long. And it's like, they wish you the new year turning over. It's like everybody wishes each other. They have these bands that go around and offer blessings, and they sing these songs. And it's listen, this is the big one. Now, you have to, on our street, they'll have a roll of like 50,000 fireworks, right? And then you blow it off at exactly 12. Then you have to open all the doors to your house and let the smoke, go through your house. This is supposed to take away the fugo, they call it, the bad spirits.
The evil spirits.
So,
see?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. We haven't been doing enough of that.
We got to light off some M80s and get that going through my house.
Listen, I'll post up. I'm going to take a little video probably today in front of our hotel. They're going to blow off, a million rounds or whatever, I want to take a video and post it. It's just, it's crazy.
It's unique when you look at around the world. And of course you watch those broadcasts of the new year being rung in countries all across the globe. And you got to think all those different places where that's the same thing, but all those unique kind of traditions that happen, especially in places like Aruba. We'll have a link up at WGNradio.com. And Matt, if you send me the video of some of that, we'll try to post maybe a little bit of that as well, as far as the fireworks. It's great. great stuff. And before we let you go, give information. Of course, you've shared so much about all different parts of the island and the traditions and some of the things you can see. But you're based at the Hilton, the Grand Dame. And so social media-wise, is there any way people can kind of keep up with you or maybe check out information for the hotel?
Yeah, there's a website, I believe, and I'm supposed to notice now. I'm going to get in trouble. I say Hilton.com, Aruba, Hilton Aruba something. I guess I'll have to get back to you on that one.
HiltonAruba.com?
Yeah. I'm guessing.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. You obviously have, and this is exactly what you're supposed to do. You've got your mind focused on providing an amazing New Year's Eve for the people down there. They're going to enjoy it. And then as you look to 2019, as we let you go, what are your resolutions or what are you looking forward to happening in the coming year?
I just, constant, never-ending improvement. That's the way it goes, personally, and in the steakhouse, in the hotel. We just work to make everybody happy. Sunset Grill has become one of the prime steakhouses on the island, and we're up like tonight. I got 350 reservations. I mean, it's just like getting better and better, and Aruba's getting bigger and bigger. We hope it just gets contained a little bit, take it easy on the hotel strip. There's a lot going on every night down here. It's just, I won't even be able to drive out of the parking lot to get home. That's how crazy it's going to be tonight. So
it's going to be crazy here in Chicago too. And it's just going to be about, I don't know, like 58 degrees cooler. So we'll deal with that.
But hey, this year I went to Chicago a couple times. I had a great time. Really a fun time. I was at the Palmer House, and then I went to Media Mart and did a little couple shows over in the chopping block over there. It really great town, great people. And Carrie, I know Carrie and Valerie Miller from Food Industry News. He said he knows you.
Yes,
I told him I was talking to him last night. So they love to come down here too. I see them every year. So.
Wow, what a small world! Everybody's going to be celebrating New Year's, and if you're lucky, you're going to be with Matt Boland down in Aruba at the Hilton enjoying. But thanks, Matt, for jumping on and kind of sharing a little bit of the vibe.
And listen, I'll think of y'all when I'm lighting the fuse tonight. Okay?
All right, light that candle.
All right, thank you, Matt. We'll talk to you soon. Happy New Year.
Thank you.
All right, we are going to take a break, and then we're going to come back. We're gonna talk, see how we can top that, Dino, as far as our personal celebrations. We'll find out what Dan's going to do as well. So keep it here. Quick break. 720 WGN. Cool tune. 720 WGN. Allstate Skyline Studio. Hi, atop. It is Dan here with you until 5 a.m. Just a little bit before we've got Ashley is in the studio, producer for On the Road. She's probably planning her big festivities. I don't know how, maybe people get some suggestions from Aruba. I think what you got to do is light off a lot of fireworks, right? Then you have to open up the door in order to get the evil spirits
out, right?
How come we never thought of that? That's what you got to do. Probably because it's cold.
When in Aruba, apparently, and that's what you do. I don't know.
So what makes in the minutes that we've got, if you're not going to do, is it just, sit there in front of the television, watch Ryan Seacrest? And what's great about that is that typically they're miserable. And we saw something on the.
What a horrible show tonight.
Well, I think some people feel like they need to make this pilgrimage out to Times Square, right, to fully embrace a New Year's experience. But now because of security, they've sequestered these people out there. And
once they get in there, they can't get out.
9 hours. And so you've got to have a.
What?
Yes. So I think you have to have a catheter system in order to. Or maybe it just depends. There's a lot of people going to the bathroom by themselves. Well, part of the whole New Year's Eve thing is celebrating, right?
And sure.
But if you're stuck,
that's no good. I could never do that.
Are you even able to, have champagne or get a drink?
You've got to be able to do something. What kind of celebration would that be if you couldn't partake in any kind of alcohol at all?
But then it would lead to having to go to the bathroom if you're stuck there for nine hours.
You're going to be going to the bathroom anyway for nine. Sooner or later, in 9 hours, you're going to the bathroom, whether you've had 10 drinks or two.
So if you're not going to make it out to physically be in New York for the giant, Waterford crystal ball drop and all of that, and you're going to be here in Chicago, some of the things, with kids and everything, sometimes they're trying to stay up, but then nobody ever really makes it.
Right.
You look back, everyone's like laying all over the place.
You're all passed out. Happy New Year. Wake up.
Yeah. So it's the kind of thing. But is that the makings of an adult New Year's Eve? It's just you put on the television, you watch Ryan Seacrest, and then you watch Janet Davies and
Martin
Jose Sanders.
Greco and the whole Channel 7 crew or Channel 5.
Is that what you do? And then you maybe make a nice dinner, right?
Yeah, I think if you're not going to go out and you want to, you know, if it's just maybe you have a few people over, maybe just you and your significant other, or what, you have a nice dinner, you know, you have a few drinks, you just kind of relax, watch a movie or two.
What movie would you watch?
Well, then you just pick one. I don't think there's one. It's not like Christmas where you're locked into a Christmas movie.
That's true.
You could pretty much put whatever movie you want in there, and I think it just depends on what whoever you're with wants to watch. You know, you might want to watch, you know, the Justice League or, you know, any of those movies, but maybe the wife wants to watch something else. I mean,
oh, you know what she wants to watch? Something really horrible with like Drew Barrymore in it.
A rom-com?
Yeah. It's one of those.
You want to watch 50 First Dates again?
Oh, yeah, Vic's not there. So maybe before the end we can get a chance, maybe a little input and advice into, you know, how he's going to celebrate. We know how Dan is going to celebrate. He's going to go off and he's going to grab life, you know,
by the horns. And
yeah, by the horns.
Take
he's going to get out there, right, and do like a typical go out there and have a blast New Year's Eve. Dino, you're going to be having some appetizers with some people.
Yeah, just going to be a laid back. I don't think it's going to be anything crazy for me. So, you know, the afternoon will be a nice time to get together with some people, and then I'll go on my way.
So, I think I'm going to be here, so I think I'm going to Skype in some family members.
You're going to be here?
I think so. I don't know how I'm going to get... I don't know how I'll get back to Florida. A lot of people are down there, and so I came here to do this, and then I guess it'll just be me watching Ryan Shiverini.
You'll be watching Marion Brooks on Channel 5 along with a few other people. They're going to be at the Hilton, Drake Hotel, and the Crystal Gardens under the Ferris wheel at Navy Pier.
I'll tell you what I'm going to do, and even if it's not on the schedule, I'll just check it out
on TV.
I'm going to watch WGN television, and I'm just going to, on the off chance that a Larry Potash may show up at an event.
Doesn't appear they're doing anything on the TV side for New Year to ring in New Year's Eve, but yeah, you might see, maybe, who knows, maybe you run into a Larry Potash somewhere else.
So I'm trying to think of like what I should make. 312-981-7200, any kind of if only there was a pitch man, you know, so like a Burt Wyman Ford to suggest.
3535 North on Ashland Avenue. Get yourself over to a theater and watch a movie.
I think things are open today. Dan, most everything's open today, right? So you can go to the grocery store, get food. I mean, it's open.
I would imagine so, yeah.
Yeah, you got to get
anything, it's, you know, maybe they close a little bit early, so maybe plan for that. But
right.
Okay.
I did the same thing on Christmas Eve. A lot of places close at like 6. So the grocery stores were, you know, they got to get in and get your stuff. But then they're going to be open on New Year's Day. I don't think they're all going to be closed on New Year's Day either. So
you got
big shopping day then.
And tomorrow is such a, well, tonight actually coming up a little bit later, you got the Northwestern Wildcats in the bowl game against Utah. That's going to be fun to see.
Blackhawks are on tomorrow.
You got the Blackhawks playing in the Winter Classic tomorrow at Notre Dame Stadium. Yeah. That's going to be awesome. And then coming up on Wednesday, it's kind of back to normal. I'll be in with Bill and Wendy. We'll be talking some food stuff. And then we'll be getting some interviews done. And then Ashley, I see her. We're going to be doing on Saturday on the road. So it's going to be just pretty much back to, and some of the people we're going to have on the road is, we're going to have Scott Pruitt. You know him as one of the most successful drivers of all time in a bunch of different series. IMSA, he's won the Rolex 24. He's raced in NASCAR, IndyCar, all that kind of stuff. So he'll be joining us talking about getting into the new year and his winery and all that kind of stuff. And then, actually, this is going to be interesting. We're going to have Jackie Speier on. And Jackie Speier she's a congresswoman now. But she was an assistant to a congressman back when the whole, you know, Jonestown. Remember Jonestown?
Yeah, I do.
Mm-hmm. You know, and so she was one of those people left for dead and wrote a book about it. So
wow.
Yeah, I think that's going to be kind of interesting.
That'll be some good radio right there. Tune in.
Yeah, we're going to definitely. Thanks, Dino. You've been a hostile witness for quite a bit
tonight. Oh, come on now.
All right, so here's the thing, too, is coming up on the opening bell, Bennett Wake Knight is going to be in here, and I'm a huge fan of Bennett. You know the commercials that he does when he's supporting all of the WGN Plus stuff. He's going to be in doing the opening bell, which is going to be awesome.